Ready.
So we are here. We're going to pretend like all that never happened. It's a new start, fresh start. Yes, I know that there are possibly some issues with the streaming. I'm working on fixing it, but bear with it, and the recording will be good in the end if you just want to wait on that. So, but welcome everybody to the show. You know, I hope I played for you. I hope it worked. I hope it came through a video that we are about to release, and is being released right now on our Odyssey channel and on the NJP website. So people that want to go watch that in full, you can see it there. I think it's a really cool video. It shows how we've grown over the years, because as people probably have heard by now, we had a huge, huge, massive event.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday in Ohio. I think that was known that that's where that was. That was in Ohio. I mean, they still haven't figured out where it was, but like we said where it was before the thing anyway. But
right.
In any case, we had a massive event. 400 people came out. It was amazing how packed that place was. The energy was crazy. I mean, that was like the biggest event, totally pro-white event I've ever been to. Where it was not just like a mixed political bag, but like all directed towards exactly our politics, completely supportive of our ideology, not like mixed with any other things, like mixed with conservatism or some other kinds of weird groups or anything, just 100% dedicated to what we're doing. And it was totally successful. No problems at all. We had people, as people might have heard, people from all generations. We had grandparents and we had little babies. We had mostly people, you know, 20s and 30s, but we did have families of all generations. I met one kid who brought his parents. He had actually red-pilled his parents and brought them to the meeting.
Yes, he
that
brought
was awesome.
Both of his parents, which was great.
Yeah, I met him, and then a guy that looked like him, just like older, comes up. He's like, hey, and I'm like, wait.
What
and
the
his
hell?
Mom comes up, and I was like, wait, you guys have to
what
be a family. And they were like, yeah, and I was like, yeah, yeah. I
Fantastic.
Can definitely see it.
No,
yeah, it was great.
I mean, I met several people that were bringing their siblings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They brought brothers and sisters, and there's one guy, he's got like a whole bunch of kids, and he brought like two of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
one friend
kids that are old enough,
four of his
kids,
kids
that are old enough to understand.
Yes.
You know, they're like in the teenagers, older teenagers.
Yeah, old enough to actually understand what it is they're coming to.
Right.
And they agree with it. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's quite remarkable, to be honest, that we've been able to host such an event, being completely deplatformed from all social media. Completely deplatformed financially from everything, totally ostracized, tons and tons of landmines in front of coming to our stuff.
Yeah.
And furthermore, we don't just let anyone in. These are not public events. You have to know someone to get in.
Right.
And yet, look at the demand for it.
Yes, and the demand has only increased. I mean, I would say the majority of people by far that I saw at this event were first-timers. Which
right.
means that the vetting, the procedures of getting people in are working, and people are, new people are coming in. I mean, I met so many new people that this was their first
time. I didn't recognize, to be honest, 60 or 70%.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of people. There was a lot of old-timers who didn't come to this one, which is fine. I mean, they will always be back at multiple things, but it was good that there were so many new people and new faces. I mean, it shows you that if we probably combine all the people that have ever come to an NJP event, it's probably well over 1,500 people at this point.
It's in the thousands, yes.
Yeah. And so this is our
If this country wasn't as huge as it is.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no. It's
we'd be
huge and
like
spread out
a massive thing already. Like,
yeah, no. It's. I mean, if we were doing this, just and even just with the numbers in like a European country, this would be like they would already be flipping the fuck. I mean, they are flipping the fuck out. I know. But just being able to get this many people, and yeah, America is huge. It's all spread out. I mean, you have states in America as big as European countries in geography wise, but then much more sparsely populated, like the state of Pennsylvania. Is not that much smaller than Germany in landmass, but it's 1/5 the population. And so, you know, which is, you know, it's presents its own challenges. But the other
regional
also,
flights are a fucking ripoff. Like,
yeah,
I mean, there's so many barriers and yet still.
Yeah.
People came. There were guys that drove 30, 40 hours.
Yeah.
In some cases, which is incredible. It's an amazing show of dedication. There's people that didn't
sleep.
Yeah, we
had the Cascadia people, SoCal people. We had people from, you know, most of the people were regional from the area, but yeah, we did have people coming from, you know, coming from down south, coming from all over the place, New England, everywhere. But we're going to have, I mean, this is going to keep happening. It's just going to keep growing. But I just was totally impressed with it. I mean, I, you know, as you and me, we mainly do the ideological work and the sort of face presenting work. We do the political theories, political narratives.
I sit out in the sun and I think with my beautiful mind.
Right.
No, I'm joking.
Well, that's mainly what we do. But whenever I walk into these things, it hits me all the work that the staff and volunteers are doing that I'm not seeing.
No, the staff is doing fantastic.
And I'm just blown away when I saw that venue and I saw how it was set up and all the tables and all the
venue was
the vendors
perfect.
And the stage and everything, the way it was set up and the way they staged it with the banner swaying in the wind and the tableau yes. behind us. I mean, it was freaking impressive.
1984.
And when people
1984
see it,
come to life.
When people see it, and when they see the videos, there's going to be a video out. If you didn't catch it already on the stream, it's going to be on Odyssey, where you're going to get a taste of what the tableau looked like. And then the final speeches for the speeches that were given are going to be released by Friday. By Friday. We still have our video people working on editing those together. And it's just wild. It's just wild. I mean, this is the first time we've really done a crowd reveal at one of our events. We've done that both for the sake of security and mainly security and privacy of people attending. But at this point, it was so many people that there's no risk.
Well, once you hit anybody, a certain yeah. threshold, it's too many fucking people.
It's too many people for them to even try, yeah.
I mean, I don't really see any, other political thing other than Trump, maybe.
Yes.
That gets as many people.
Yes, I was saying
Trump is the only other one.
And us and Trump are the only people that do the politics of mass meetings.
Right.
The mass political meeting of the political forum.
The other people try to do it, but no one shows up.
Right.
Like Biden had a competing rally in, I believe, Pennsylvania with Trump at the same time. And he didn't have one tenth of the support in the audience.
Yeah, and even the Dark Brandon speech he did didn't have an audience. It was like 30.
We're joking that Dark Brandon was using NJP aesthetics.
It is. Red, it is.
Red,
it
white, is. And black. Like that. You know, it's not really something you associate with the Democratic Party. There was a kind of militant kind of vibe to it with the Marines in the back and stuff that they're trying to channel. But the thing is, what is that rooted in? Like, what exactly? What you're a militant? You're going to mobilize the population for gay marriage, defending gay marriage? The Republicans aren't even attacking that,
right?
Or abortion or whatever. I mean, this is uninspiring.
Well, they are. That's what they definitely are trying to do, and it gained traction in certain circles. Like there was, I would say, like the militant Twitter libtard circles loved it and they liked it, but they liked it mainly because he was threatening people that they hate with state violence, which is always popular. You know, like, let's be honest, like, this is the funny thing. The Republicans don't seem to not get this through their head. Threatening your enemies with state power is popular with your own people.
All right.
Like, they have this, like, some kind of principled critique of this, but it's like, no, like, that's what everybody does. And if you refuse to do it, you're effectively not doing politics. But yes, Biden absolutely channeled our optics and our energy. I mean, that sounds weird to say, but they're copying us. Just like AFPAC copied us, these people are copying us now. Or maybe this is just the moment that we're in America. We're just in this moment.
I think that we're just, we're going, well, one thing that's for sure, the white identitarian politics are coming back. There's going to be another 2016 moment. I think actually I'm going to remedy or correct my previous predictions. I think Trump is going to have to run.
Yeah.
At this point, I think he's going to run. And the only reason, the thing that changed now from a few months ago is that if he doesn't run, he's going to possibly go to jail.
Right. The only thing that will save him is being president again.
So he's got to do it. He's got to go out there and he's got to become president. And the fact that he's going out there years after January 6th, talking about paying legal fees for January 6th defendants, getting them out of pardoning them if he's president, things like that. That shows you, like, okay, the man, you know, he's got an all or nothing gambit that he's playing now.
Right.
And the only and because he's desperate, he's not going to do blacks for Trump. I think it was Warren that brought this up. He was watching the speech. And you notice that, like, you know, for all of the 2020 election, Trump had he had minorities or visible non-whites centered behind him.
That was on purpose. They choreographed all that.
That is no longer what they're doing.
Really?
They didn't do that. No, they didn't do that for the speech the other day. He's done with that.
So there's no more. There's
he's
no
reading
more.
The room. He's reading the room.
There's no more blacks for Trump sitting directly behind the speaker.
There was one, but he was out to the side.
Yeah. But yeah, but see, they were staging it so that specifically behind Trump during all the 2020 election cycle and during his meetings, it was staged. So the only blacks and non-whites in the entire room were situated behind the speaker, were situated behind Trump so you could see them in all the shots. And they were, and what was so stupid about it is they were disinterested. Many of them were definitely obviously paid to be there and to hold those signs, and they didn't care two shits about what was being said. They were bored. They were looking at their watch. They were laughing. They weren't paying any attention. They didn't give a shit.
Those people are going to be in the DeSantis camp.
Yeah, or whoever pays them. They don't. These are people who don't care. I mean, literally, like, I'm not even, when I say paid, I don't even mean like platinum plan. I mean, like, they were told, we will give you $200 or $1,000 to come and sit in a seat behind Trump and hold the sign for a few hours. Here's a check.
Why do you think? I believe it was 50 Cent who said that the Trump people offered him some exorbitant amount of money to endorse Trump or be seen in public with Trump. Like, you think all those rappers that were posing in public with Trump, you think they all did that shit for free because they love Trump?
No,
they did that because the Trump people paid them a whole bunch of money.
Right.
And the ones with agents that were irresponsible, not looking at the long game.
They just did
told
it.
Told them to take it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like little pimp, little peep. What's his
name? Little pimp, little peep. I thought he got killed or something like that, or died of AIDS or something. But
didn't he? I mean, whatever it is.
I know Kanye West. Trump,
you want to talk tone deaf. Niggas fucking rioting across America and bringing gangster rappers on stage in Butler, Pennsylvania, which is full of like mad racist people. Like,
it's really stupid. PA.
No shit.
Yeah.
No shit. And it's not that those people are going to vote for the Democrats. It's just that they're not going to vote.
They're just going to be like, what the hell is this? Like showing up to a Trump rally in West PA and there's like fucking nigger gangster rappers on stage. It's like, what the fuck are you
talking
about? What the
like
fuck
people
is
are
this?
Just confused. This is not what I wanted. That.
Yeah, no, it's actually very dis. Now, if you had like Kid Rock or something, that would be one thing. But you have like these fucking weirdos. Yeah.
I mean, I saw the parts of the Trump speech. I didn't see the whole thing. And Trump is back in his old form. Like, he's going out there saying, I think we should be executing drug dealers. They're selling fentanyl. Let's kill them.
Yeah, dude, all this shit.
I
fell like a ton of bricks for in 2016.
They're killing so many people. It's time we bring back the death penalty. He's not going to do it.
He's not going to do it. He had his chance.
He's like, you know what he said? He actually addressed that. He's like, hey, I had a committee of do-gooders. And the do-gooders, this blue ribbon committee, they went out there and they were saying we need more treatment. We need more. And I say we shoot them.
Dude.
He's doing that.
I mean, it's smart politics.
He wants to win.
It's smart politics. You know, that signals to me he's looking to win. That he's saying that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. People that
don't understand. That's the speech you should have given in Butler, which has been decimated by.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, he didn't. And he lost Pennsylvania. And, you know, a lot of people that don't get politics well and don't understand mass thinking and stuff like that, they assume that because elites don't like that stuff, that because the people on the news and the New York Times and hell, even the New York Post don't like that stuff and are critical of that kind of stuff, that people themselves don't just love it. You're wrong. People like that shit.
Right.
They like the idea of the state going out there and crushing the bad guys. They love it. They love that idea. It's very popular. They love the idea of the state standing up for their rights, of somebody backing them up. You know, as Hitler said, the state is the weapon in the life struggle. It's the people's weapon in the life struggle.
If you're not vying for state power and to use it, then nothing you do makes sense and has any value.
Right.
Yeah. If you're just out there to be, oh, more deregulation, you know, that kind of shit, then there's no point in anything you're doing.
Right.
Like the point of populism is that a need is not being met. You know, you can look at all the European and American center-right developments since the early 2000s in particular, where all of them had erased racial appeals from their discourse by the early 2000s.
Right.
So in the 90s, you would see a little more dog whistling and so on. The dog whistling became more and more muted.
Yeah.
As in the early 2000s, maybe they do some anti-Muslim shit and stuff. The center right became more reliant on it as time went on.
Uh-huh.
But all that did, all the abandonment of cultural and racial politics did was open up the field for a Trump or Geert Wilders, Salvini. All these people that came into the public eye to fill this vacuum. Now they're not good either, but they are meeting a market need.
Yeah.
Not necessarily all of the problems out there are economic alone. There's mm-hmm. holistic problems going on, and economic problems are usually a symptom of various other problems. It's not we don't live in a Marxist system, a Marxist world. It's actually a world where human choices and will and different agendas that sometimes the economics are a means to an end, right? So that's like, for example, the deregulation of finance, which we always talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Like the means is finance. The ends is the eradication of all European descended people and all borders.
Right. Because it's when the more power you give financial Jewry, the more money you let them keep, the more money you let them swindle, the more money they have to change politics and change narratives through media, through political donations, through NGOs that they found, and they get these libtards, they hire these libtards to work these social issues and stuff. So like the Jews well understand the connection between money and social power. They use it all the time. I mean, it's their primary weapon. But
I mean,
you
look at stuff like the, the crazy anti-white stuff has been around forever. You look at the 1960s, the Weather Underground, mm-hmm. you see like that book, I think it was written by a Jew, where he's talking, and actually, no, it was a Weather Underground. And he was talking about the time, I forgot the name of it, but he was talking about the time that he overheard these kikes. He was the only white, by the way, the only non-Jewish mm-hmm. white in this meeting. And these Jews were like sitting there, this is in the 1960s, sitting there talking about like, would you kill a white baby for the cause? You know, and this one Gentile was kind of like, nah, I mean, that's a little too far, regardless of what, that's like way, way over the line. But all the Jews were kind of like browbeating him over it. They were like, what? You wouldn't do that for the cause and you're not serious. And it was at that point that he realized that he was in a room full of crazy people.
Right.
And so that kind of thinking has always been around. What's popularized it is two things. One, social media has allowed them to reach more and more people. But number two, it's the money and power that derives from finance that allows them to suppress, to buy up a Twitter or buy enough shares in a Twitter like Paul Singer did, to buy enough shares or own Facebook, to own all these tech companies and control the narrative so that the person says, hey, Maybe killing a white baby isn't something you should do in pursuit of a political ambition. Those opinions get shut down, censored, deplatformed.
Right. And ultimately, the way they actually do control social media significantly, and they use it to promote stuff that initially it's like, well, this is the cool thing. And then that quickly spirals into something anti-white. And they've been doing that, like you see that with all the kinds of videos that they promote to kids and stuff like that. And this tranny stuff in particular has been the source of that. There's been some research on this that the schools promote, they don't really promote to kids to become trans. There's an idea that maybe they do amongst people that aren't in school. But I've talked to kids in school, and some of them are like, my school avoids that shit like the plague. Some of them are like, Yeah, it's addressed, but it's only addressed in terms of, like, you shouldn't be mean to these people if they're there. There doesn't, and depending on where you are, of course, and this is probably people in more rural schools or more middle-class schools in suburbs or something like that. But when you there are schools that are going to be promoting it, but really where the kids are getting it is social media.
Yes.
Now, the schools aren't doing anything to fight it, and they're going
conservatives
to conservatives
don't
to
want
fold.
To talk about it. Like, conservatives yeah. want, conservatives are like, oh, the problem isn't that, is it all these unregulated capitalist media conglomerates? No.
Right. It's the school. The problem is they want to cut teacher pay.
No, it's just school. The concept of public schooling is the problem. So, you know what? Let's privatize all the schools and put Kanye West in charge of school, which actually he has – Kanye West has like a whole like string of schools of like – I think they're like charter schools.
Yeah.
And they've been – you know, of course, they've been outed as a scam. You know, you got 75 IQ Kanye West running your school system. I mean, is that really preferable?
Right. And I mean, LeBron James, look what happened to the LeBron James school.
LeBron James, I promise schools. Yes. This is just a money grab. Like, a nigger rapper's investment scam is going to control your education system. That's actually worse than public schooling. So,
Well, the other thing is conservatives, like, public schooling would be better if they would actually fight over curriculum rather than funding. Like they, you know, their solution is don't pay teachers. Well, then obviously the teachers are going to hate conservatives. Right. So like it's fucking stupid. It's stupid on purpose. And I think these are the kind of politics that we're trying to bring to people is the politics of like we want to use the government to help our own people.
Period.
That's like anybody that doesn't want to do that. Or, I mean, only Jews would be, like, pushing you to not do that, right? Like, anybody who's telling you that's a bad idea because it's immoral or something, particularly Jews who do it for themselves. Not only do they help themselves in their own country, they help themselves to yours. And then they tell you you're a bad person if you want to use your own government for your own benefit. I mean, that's ridiculous. So everybody should throw these people out in their ear and have nothing to do with them. But
the knives come out when you... When you break with the left-right axis, the conventional left-right thinking, post-war left-right thinking, and you actually think for yourself independently, like, hey, what works, what doesn't work, right?
Right.
That's when the knives come out. That's when the censorship starts. That's when you get problems with the law. That's when you get problems with deplatforming. It's when you actually break through that and. To an extent, rhetorically, Trump does that to some degree.
Yeah.
And that's why they –
Well, he definitely did it in 2016. And it looks like he's starting to do it again. And they just were like, okay, you know, we'll tolerate this. At first, they were like, okay, they were willing to tolerate it. And then now they're just fed up with it.
Like, he's also going hard against the FBI. And he's calling them – like, these people are animals. These people – you know, people love that. And you know what's funny?
The FBI's never going to fucking recover from this.
No, and we actually had – we had Greg Conte give a speech.
Amazing speech.
A great speech by Greg on the – just detailing the abuses of the FBI in the last few years.
It was almost too
long. There are things in it – he didn't even scratch the paint on it.
I know.
There are things in that that really I saw people in the crowd like getting like frothing at the mouth in anger at listening to what they do. He wasn't really editorializing.
No, he was being very matter of the fact.
2 years, very. You know how Greg is. He's not going to be. He's not like a demagogue, right? Okay, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, he got a little bit into it towards the end.
Yes. I mean, double-breasted suit and the pointing. Who is he?
Yeah, no. I mean, we'll leave that up to the listener to pick up on that. But
in all seriousness, he was simply detailing the.
And also, he's skinny.
he was detailing the various just things that FBI agents have been arrested for in the last 2 years. We're talking about like raping 5-year-olds.
Yeah, no, it's horrible.
You know, like shit like that. Like and getting away with it for years with the help of
Trump is saying like they suck, but he's like saying like
they suck because they go after me.
Because they went after me. It's like why don't like this is the thing I've always disliked about Trump. It, in fact, pissed me off the most is that it's always about him. And then what that does is the people that glom onto him because they like the fact that he's attacking people that they hate, they then also, because they're not hearing anything better or different, they then take it as like, I hate the FBI because of what they did to Trump.
Right.
But I hate the FBI because of what they do, to everyone. All of us.
Right.
To all of us. To everyone. To what they're doing, generally speaking. I particularly hate them. I will also say I particularly hate them for what they do to us.
Yes.
I'm not above that, but it also, you know, I understand that in making that attack, I have to give something to other people too. I have to recognize other people and what's happened to them as well.
Yeah.
And all of that needs to stop.
What they do to political dissidents.
Yeah.
Not just directly, but indirectly. Like they go around, doing all kinds of nonsense.
What they've done to the January 6th people, what they've done to everybody.
What they've done to the McMichaels. Remember, they're doing hard federal time as well. They haven't, I believe they've already. I haven't been following their federal case. It's kind of, their state case. But so, I mean, I don't know if you saw a picture of them recently, the McMichaels and that other poor guy. They look straight up crazy right now.
Yeah.
And it's because they've been through some shit. Like they've shaved their heads. They look like convicts now.
Yeah,
these
they're
are
being
men that one
tortured.
Of them is an ex-police officer. The others are family men. These are normal family men that were taken into the system. And, you know, basically are being tortured. You're right.
Yeah.
They're going to spend the rest of their life in prison.
Yeah, and they couldn't even let them, like I said, it's particularly cruel that those father and son are in the system together and they won't even allow them to see each other.
Right.
And it's like, what the hell? That
it's
is
a lot
just,
of thought that went into that.
That's just abject cruelty. I mean, that's just like, that's just that. Yeah, I mean, will they ever allow to be able to see each other? I mean, will the prison system ever arrange for that? I mean, I doubt it.
Oh,
I mean, because it's a race revenge thing. I mean, in D.C., they have these Nigerians because they can't hire D.C. blacks to be correction officers because they've all got criminal records.
Right.
So they bring in Nigerians who you don't know what the hell their record looks like. And they're the ones that are like or West Africans of some stripe or another. And they're the ones doing the guarding at these places. And they're just doing racial abuse to these people. And unfortunately, you know, you get some glimmers of it through Gateway Pundit and whatnot, but they don't want to talk about race either because their mandate is literally to not have white people do racial politics. That is literally like the mandate and the purpose for existence of the Gateway Pundit is to undermine and attack the very idea of racial politics.
I mean, you know who's not so bad on this? It's Douglas McGregor. He actually has an article about this, about the crazy Biden speech and shit. And he actually mentions whites. He says, listen to this. So this is his article. It says, Washington is running on empty. It says here, the Biden administration that came to power in January 2021 is more the antithesis of the America First that voters supported in 2016. The Biden administration is a program of denationalization, an apparatus of political hygiene designed to cleanse the government, schools, police, and the armed forces, and then all of American society of its historic malady, white supremacy. Since white Americans have been the dominant racial group in the history of the United States, the removal or vandalization of historic monuments and markers that memorialize America's history and ascent to greatness in the months before the 2020 presidential election was viewed by many on the so-called conservative right as a panacea for an aggrieved black minority's anger. So he's actually attacking conservatives for going along with it.
Right.
Because on some level, they see it as the path of least resistance, but I would say they're paid to lay down.
Yeah, well, they know that if they don't, that's it for them.
It says
there's a system of negative incentives that they're following as well. Like, if they don't do it, the conservative that doesn't do that, like, who is the one, he was possibly, like, you know, who is the one in Virginia that was actually, was doing the, standing for the
Confederate? Youngkin, no, I'm sorry.
It was Corey something, like.
Corey something, yeah.
Not Corey Booker, but it was like, and you know who I'm talking about. He was like, he was even signaling to us at one point, like, trying to get us in his camp and stuff like that. And he would have a Confederate flag in his advertising. They got rid of him quick fast. They
didn't
have anything to do with him. They made sure that he got no funding and he was trounced in a Republican primary. So, yeah. And there was even all these editorials, like, and conservatives were putting out editorials, like, it's time for his odious politics to go. I mean, he was not any, believe me, no George Wallace, was he? But, you know, at least he was some, like, slim little remnant of it. And forget about it. They just got
rid
of him.
Yeah, and he came very close to winning.
Yes, he tried a number of different things. He tried Senate,
Virginia,
he tried governor. He was a congressman at one point, and then he tried governor, and he tried Senate, and they just the Jews just shut him down hard after Charlottesville.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and these are what we would call the conservatives that run the Republican Party are the John Bolton conservatives. They're not actually anyone that you need to be like thinking about anything else. They are like, yes, some FBI agents vote Republican, but again, they're Liz Cheney, John Bolton Republicans.
Right.
Okay. They're not Trumpists. Right. They're not
Bill Kristol Republicans.
Right. Exactly. And so let me just continue reading a little bit here. It says, others thought the determination to redefine America's past was simply a temporary groundswell of Marxist-inspired, anti-Western, anti-white, and anti-Christian forces, old hatreds that sank deep roots in the Democratic Party of the 1960s. These observers were wrong. The redefinition of U.S. national identity, culture, and history is national policy, not just the reaction of parts of the American electorate. In service of this policy, the Biden administration holds unchallenged command of the Department of Justice, the U.S. Armed Forces, and the surveillance state, in combination with enormous support from the mainstream media, Hollywood, and funding from U.S. and foreign billionaire oligarchs, facilitates a demonization of any person or organization that objects to this denationalization. This explains why, quote, cancel culture is widely encouraged and sanctioned. This is actually the closest I've ever seen mainstream commentators talk about this in an accurate way.
Right. Yeah.
If Americans fail to conform to expectation to what the Biden administration insists Americans are supposed to think, say, or do in schools, colleges, the military, and the workplace, then these Americans are ostracized, censored, or excluded from print, broadcast, and social media. Their means of income are diminished. And the more critical issue of the Biden administration, the more powerful the cancel culture. The outcome is a growing system of intolerance that rewards unquestioning compliance with the left's policies and actively punishes dissent. Resistance to the Biden administration has been slow to develop. In D.C., resistance is hardly noticeable. With the threat of Trumpism gone, everyone in Washington's proverbial swamp stepped forward to sign the death certificate of the populist nationalist American right. Meanwhile, Washington's depraved policy of arming a corrupt Ukrainian government for a fight with Russia that its people and its army cannot win is destroying the lives of millions, but keeps the swamp creatures flush with cash. I want to add something else, by the way. The euro has been destroyed to such a point that it's now less than the dollar. It's fluctuating between being on par or less than the U.S. dollar. And furthermore, the Europeans are going to be much more reliant on American light natural gas and commodities now that this is going on. But their economies are going to be destroyed nevertheless. So an economic recession we haven't seen in maybe 50, 60,
yeah, we have to
years
talk. Europe
is coming
get
for Europe. Everyone because the U.S., I mean, yes, the Europeans are going to suffer the most directly with energy prices and so on, but they're not going to be able to buy as many U.S. products. The top commodities suppliers to Europe are the United States, Brazil, and Argentina. And there's no way that the European states are going to be able to buy these commodities at the same rate they did last year.
Be able to get it. I mean, they don't have getting set up to receive the kinds of things that they're getting from another source other than the Russian pipelines in the same quantities is a project that will take years. I mean, eventually they could ramp up. But they do not have the setup for this now. They don't. I know there's some people talking about you need certain types of terminals to receive it. Additionally, shipping natural gas is stupid when you can send it by pipeline. It's a really inefficient way to move it. Trying to shift off natural gas stuff to oil or to something else. Even coal, which America has plenty of and actually can be shipped overseas, it's still is going to be a long time before they can replace what they're losing from Russia with American coal. They're very quick to ban Russian coal. They banned it. They themselves banned it. They did that because they figure, well, Yeah. We don't use it that much, and they have some coal in Europe, and we can get it from America what we need. But even that isn't
well. I don't know what they were thinking. So they impose all the European Union froze like $200 billion worth of Russian assets, essentially stealing them, and then they're shocked that the Russians cut off the gas supply. What the fuck?
It took Russia a while to do it as well.
You think they're going to respond to that by just sanctioning French cheese or Norwegian cod liver oil?
No, I think that they were somewhat high on their own supply, or they believed that America's military and economic position could intimidate the Russians into complying, and it didn't work. America is increasingly a paper tiger. I mean, this is a seminal moment. This is a big historical moment. When American Empire, there was a time when Russia would immediately have capitulated to this kind of force from America.
They've been prepared. They won't do it now. Long time.
And so this is a world historical moment when the Russians do not need to do that anymore, and it is not something that they're happy about. that the system is happy about, and they are realizing, holy shit, yeah, like and right now. Russia has just over the weekend announced, and the latest article I've gotten, this is 5 hours ago from CNBC, Russia has cut off gas supplies completely to Europe, indefinitely, from Nord Stream 1. They have shut down from their side the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. Remember, when they shut down Nord Stream 2, that was a project that was not online yet. It was going to come online, and actually shutting down Nord Stream 2 was a big project of American foreign policy, including Trump. Going all the way back to 2017, when Trump went to Poland and attacked the Nord Stream 2. This is something that very few people know. And from Poland in 2017, he gave a speech attacking Germany and Russia for building Nord Stream 2.
Yes.
And so everyone thought he was a Russia shill. You're absolutely wrong about that. And so he basically gave a speech to the Polish saying, no, we don't support this. We want to shut this down. They did shut it down, but it wasn't even shipping gas yet. Like, they just shut down the future thing that was meant to make it easier on people in Europe. And of course, what they didn't want was, they were saying, this is going to give Germany even more outsized economic power in Europe, which I don't really care about. I mean,
what's amazing is that Germany is being carried to essentially pulled towards their demise.
Yeah.
The real-life Morgenthau plan is unfolding.
They're actually now doing like a Morgenthau plan to Germany. They didn't have the balls to do it after World War II.
Right.
Now they're doing it. Yeah.
And the problem is that, you know, while they're doing this, the Jews in the media are actually blaming Germany. Like, they're blaming Germany for all the problems in Europe.
For the temerity to make deals with Russia.
Not just that, but also, like, for the green stuff they were doing. Like, they're blaming Germany for all of that shit. As if they could have foreseen this.
Well, because Germany was pushing like green energy stuff.
So they closed down their power plants and shit. They're saying this is all Germany's fault.
Well, that's a very
Jewish opinion.
It's also the kind of thing conservatives in America would say. Yeah. Like, this is their fault because they tried to do wind power or something like that.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, look, I think a lot of that stuff is stupid, and I think a lot of it is a boondoggle myself. And frankly, it has been. But like, when you basically, but the other thing is they were also attacking Germany from the other side for Nord Stream 2. So at the same time that Germany was doing all that shit, they also were building this other pipeline for natural gas. Probably because they knew that they had to keep a diversified energy portfolio, and a lot of that fucking green shit is PR.
Yes.
And so, because all that shit doesn't work. Like, I'll be honest with you, that stuff doesn't fucking work.
I think it does work to some extent. It's just not a panacea. It can't fix everything.
It can't possibly make up for fossil fuels.
Reliant on fossil fuels. It's just not. Well, it's a long-term thing.
I mean, I actually think there's a huge question mark behind that, but it's not worth arguing about because it's not very important.
Right.
The point is that you can't even say that because Germany had a deal with Russia for another natural gas pipeline. So you can't even say that they were like in total thrall to this green energy crap because they obviously weren't. So the issue there is that they were – so at the same time they're attacking them for the green stuff, they're also attacking them for Nord Stream 2. But now Nord Stream 1 is cut off, and now not only Germany but all of Europe, which also depended on buying from Germany after they import from Russia. They were also selling to the rest of Europe. And it's
another
just not-
ridiculous aspect of this is that actually a lot of the European energy they're getting in like on emergency markets is actually Russian energy that the Chinese are reselling at a massive premium to them. Right. So that's an extra layer of retarded.
Yeah, no, I know. There's,
like that? Yeah. that's Russian energy. We just had a markup.
Right. Yeah. And they're doing it because it's like cleaner or something like that. I mean, it's.
Oh, Lord.
It's absurd. So I got this article up. This is from CNBC from 5 hours ago, or maybe it was written before and updated 5 hours ago. Russia's cut off gas supplies to Europe indefinitely. Here's what you need to know. September 6th, 9:49 a.m. Russia claims punitive economic sanctions imposed by the West are responsible for the indefinite halt to gas supplies via Europe's main pipeline. Represents the clearest indication yet the Kremlin is seeking to force Europe to lift the economic measures in order for Moscow to turn taps back on. Why shouldn't they do this? Like, why? Here's the question. Like, what? Like, you can complain that it's, like, immoral all you want, but so what? They don't have to listen to you.
Well, all they're doing is sanctioning them back.
Yes. Like, yeah, I know. I mean,
why you just sanction them to begin with?
Yeah, you sanction them when they've actually got more leverage. I mean, that was the thing that I think was a tough.
Well, how dare you?
That was a tough thing that they didn't get. And we were talking about this. It's like when you sanction someone who act, and I didn't even understand it fully. I had to do research into how the energy markets and everything worked. And I did a lot of reading on that over the winter after the war started, where I was like, this is the dumbest thing in the world. And it's not like people weren't warning them. There are plenty of intellectuals telling them, plenty of people that research this stuff telling them, plenty of researchers were telling them this was the deal, or this was going to happen. Just that was never on TV, it was never part of mainstream political narrative, and you figure, like, a lot of these politicians, they're also morons that just watch TV, right? And so,
I think that's actually a story here that we need to actually take into account, that actually... Maybe they really are just stupid. Like they
I think some of them are just dumb,
understand
dude.
What's, yeah. What's they're not fit for. I mean, we saw in the United Kingdom, Liz Truss, who, I mean...
She's just dumb. She's just stupid.
It's like the female Mr. Bean just became prime minister. Okay? I mean, that bitch is dumb as shit.
Yeah, I mean, she's dumb. Just dumb.
She ain't Margaret Thatcher. I fucking loathe Margaret Thatcher every bone in my body.
At least she was intelligent.
Wasn't dumb. She wasn't dumb. She was a shrewd and disciplined woman.
Yeah.
This person, like, holy fuck, is she stupid?
She's fucking.
She was like, she was like threatening Russia when she was a foreign minister. Threatening Russia, said, you better not go to this city. And then Sergey Lavrov went. I was like, that city is like 20 miles from Moscow. You retard.
No, that was, you know, it's funny. Is some people said that was a deliberate troll. Others say it wasn't. But yeah, here she is.
Here she is.
So apparently, her first speech, this is from today as well, we can ride out the storm. I just saw this in the sidebar of the other article.
Oh,
we can ride out the storm. Liz Truss promises immediate action on energy bills in first speech as UK PM. I doubt it. I doubt it. Now, the UK might be in a better position than other parts of Europe because they're more equipped to take imports overseas. And they have a better, you know, more intense relationship with America. But, you know, I don't fucking know, dude. I seriously doubt it.
Well, you know, another issue that's going on here is that the SWIFT is no longer the big, like, monopoly. Like, there's a financial war going. Like,
right.
The reason why China and Russia being in an alliance is such a threat to global liberalism. Is that the Chinese, they may be militarily unimpressive, but they have tons of financial power. I mean, I believe that the Chinese now hold more debt and more financial power than the United States. It's something that is not being talked about, but that I've seen Jews in foreign policy journals talk about this, and they're talking about it like, well, if we don't have financial monopolies over the world, then how do we guarantee that illiberal systems and ideologies are excluded from the markets?
Right.
Like, how do we keep Iran and North Korea out of the global market if China is the number one market, the number one financial entity? And furthermore, like, they don't like that. I've seen a criticism in foreign policy journals that the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative, which actually is being compared to the Marshall Plan. Okay, you better not believe the Marshall Plan was just like this nice thing that we did to help people. No, the point of the Marshall Plan was to erect a post-war liberal order where countries would have their economic systems dependent on the United States in more ways than one. through an initial injection of tons of capital. The Chinese have done something similar with the Belt and Road Initiative. That now, if you depend on the Chinese to build up your infrastructure, it's like a Marshall Plan. But that Marshall Plan doesn't exclude non-democracies. Okay, so you could be a dictatorship, or you could be an Islamist, or Nazi, or Taliban, or Chinese, whatever the hell the North Koreans are these days. You know, you could be whatever you want and be in the Belt and Road Initiative. And so that gives Jews less power in terms of the veto on your on your internal economic situation. So this is all, I mean, right now.
Here, so this is interesting. So Liz Truss is promising a $100 billion. Now, this is something that sounds like it might be somewhat of a good idea. A $100 billion bailout to the British people to cover rising energy costs. There's a problem, though. Well, first of all, this Jew, Dr. Solomon Fiedler, is quoted in CNBC as being absolutely opposed to this, right?
Right.
And he says, this is not going to be so easy. If incumbent listen to this Judaism. If incumbent utility companies freeze prices now, but individually keep them above cost in the future, they could be outcompeted by new entrants in the future, which do not have to recuperate current losses and thus could undercut them. What new fucking entrants are you talking about, buddy? It's a fucking monopoly. Energy is a monopoly almost everywhere. What are you talking about?
This is what I would call feudalism, not feudalism. Feudalism. In that Jews say that any state activism or any attempt at fixing problems is futile.
But even if that's true, even if this is true, who cares? You know, that's another thing. Who gives a fuck? Because it's not about the companies. And they says this does not look like a time-consistent strategy. Again, who fucking cares? The Russia-Ukraine war is not a time-consistent fucking strategy. Like, what you are doing, sanctions on Russia are not a time-consistent strategy. What the fuck are you talking about? So another possibility would be to fund the current freeze of the levy on energy consumers in the future, but this would in effect be a new tax, requiring Liz Truss to go back on one of her key promises, which was no new taxes. Now, $100 billion to bail out people for the energy prices, it sounds like it could be a good idea. Probably not enough. Right. But here's the other problem. We talk a lot about MMT and how, like, the state, the money that the state can, in fact, create money, and it's okay for it to do this, and it doesn't need to use debt mechanisms and things like that. And in some sense, it doesn't even need to use taxes that much. The problem is, when you actually are up against a hard commodity shortage, then all the money in the world doesn't matter.
Right.
Because all you're going to do is now just make it more expensive with this $100 billion. So the problem is a political one here. It is not one where, okay, prices are rising on this thing. We can give people a little money and help them out through this crisis. This is now that Nord Stream 1 is caught up, you're up against a hard commodity shortage. You can't just put money into that. The money can only work when you are not using all of your resources and commodities. That's when you can print money. That's when the state can print money. That is the whole theory of MMT.
The United States can do it.
Yes.
The United States can do it because we have infinite resources.
Because we have oil here.
Right.
And we can easily ramp up oil. There's untapped wells in America that can easily be utilized.
Right. I was talking to Paul about this. He's a Polish nationalist on my show last week. And he was telling me, the government in Poland is probably going to try to, like, regulate the price of coal so that it's affordable. But the problem is you're going to have, like, the planning problem of, well, there's no fucking coal in the country.
Yeah, this is a problem.
It's going to be super cheap.
America
stores will be empty.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the price of coal will be low, but there won't be any. America has tons of coal. Megatons, millions of tons, billions of tons of coal in America, right? We have lots of coal. It's not a problem for us. So, like, America could easily either cap prices on coal or else, mandate more coal production or something like that, and it would be okay. Similar with oil. We have a ton of oil. We have as much oil as we need, and we have untapped wells. We have wells that are tapped that are not running in America right now. There are also plenty of wells that could be tapped all up and down the Gulf of Mexico, in Alaska. We have a ton of it. We have everything we need. So America could do this kind of big time. America just do like a huge autarkic state socialism program, and everybody would be great. But Europe has these problems. Now, Europe does have coal to some extent. They don't have natural gas. They don't have oil. Big problem. There's other commodities they don't have. Like rubber was a huge one that Germany has always had a problem with, right? So there's always been issues with commodity shortages in Europe. And you just can't print your way out of that. not to sound like a libertarian, but legitimately, you can't. Commodity shortages, and it's a hard, and it's a, the answer there is political rapprochement with Russia. It's the only solution to your problem. It's the only one, and it's totally off the table. There's no Jew in all of Europe, European economic and finance, and government finance and all that stuff that will allow that, that conversation to even be put on the table.
Right. I mean, the solution is twofold. The historical solution to Europe's problem is just colonialism.
Right. Yes, that's why.
Once that becomes untenable, then you have to just play nice with countries you may not agree with, or countries that you just have to be nice to them.
Right. And Germany, their problem in the Second World War with rubber was because they didn't have any rubber-producing colonies in Africa.
Right.
Those were all in the hands of the English-speaking and French powers.
Right.
So they didn't. They didn't have them. They tried to get them, and they got outcompeted for them. And so they had to develop synthetic rubber and all this stuff, right? And so
that's read this. So, I mean, I think, you know, no offense to the ladies out there, but I think part of the problem in Europe of not knowing that, you have to know your strength, right? And you also have to know that if you hit someone, they're going to hit you back. And that might be actually harder for some women to understand. And all the major players in Europe now are women for the most part. So I don't want to make it about that, but, like, you know, there is something to that. I mean, look at – like, Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission, looked legitimately shocked that Russia would return the favor on sanctions. Yeah. She looked objectively shocked. Like, she, listen to this. She's like, the European Union's power price-setting system is no longer functioning properly. It requires changes after Russian President Vladimir Putin turned energy into a weapon, according to Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. What the fuck do you think you're going to do? What do you think they're going to do? They have this over you. You're supporting their enemies in a war. What do you think they're going to do? It says here, quote, the electricity market is no more a functioning market because there's one actor, Putin, who's systematically trying to destroy it and to manipulate it. So we really have to react to that, and that's why we're addressing now the composition of the electricity market, she told a press conference in Denmark on Tuesday. This is from August 30th, by the way. It says, the Commission, the EU's executive arm, is devising a plan to step into the energy market, intervening in the short term to dampen soaring power costs and overhauling its design in the longer term to break the link between gas and electricity prices. The bloc's leaders are coming under increasing pressure to act as Russia keeps limiting supplies before the start of the hunting of the heating season. Not hunting, heating season.
It's going to be the hunting season, so people are going to get.
You know what Lenin says? Lenin says it best. All societies are three meals away from chaos, boosting the risk of shortages this winter. Leaders from Baltic Sea countries who gathered in Denmark today pledged increasing offshore wind capacity to the region. Good luck with that.
Yeah, right.
We're united in calls for reducing the EU dependence on Russian fossil fuels and decoupling gas and power prices. The details on how the EU intervention would work have yet to be hashed out, though, with energy ministers set to discuss options at an emergency meeting on September 9th in Brussels. Quote, Russia has weaponized energy once again, said Lithuania's President Gitanas Nausėda. Quote, I call on the European institutions to act swiftly on price-tackling measures on the European
Union. Well, what about, the funny thing
is, I call the European Union to do magic.
Well, this whole thing of, like, Russia is weaponizing energy, well, the West is just weaponizing weapons. Like,
how dare they?
If
how
you're
dare
sending,
they weaponize
it? Why should they give you energy if you're using it to send weapons to their enemy?
Yeah, I mean, the power.
Just basically.
Your economic power is being used to manufacture arms that are actually extending the Ukraine war.
Right, the Ukraine war could have and should have been long over.
The Ukrainian war would have been over in a couple of months, were it not for NATO arming them in the biggest weapons transfer in the history of the
human race.
And
all of that is going through European infrastructure to get to them.
So, guess what? You want to be part of the war, so be it. You get to be part of the war. Right. Now you get to eat some shit.
I want to see this, what this woman says.
Here's another funny thing. You have to see Ursula von der Leyen.
Here's this EU energy chief. Russia's using natural. Here's the thing. It's not just that it's a woman. Look how young she is.
Yes.
It's like you've got these like 30-year-old women.
No, there are perfectly competent women out there, but it's just like when you have all women in charge of everything.
And all like now Ursula von der Leyen is not young, and neither is Liz Truss. But like, why is this what looks to be a 30-year-old woman like EU energy chief?
I mean, right.
Unless that's a journalist or something, but I don't know.
I don't know. It could be a journalist. I don't know. I haven't seen.
Look, there, these two broads.
Oh my God.
That Gazprom could use via Ukraine. There is also Turk Stream. There is even pipeline that connects Europe via Poland. So alternative pipelines are there. But this is interesting that at the moment when Europe witnesses lower gas prices, Gazprom starts manipulating the flows from their side. And this is again what has happened. And this is clear that Russia uses natural gas as a weapon. We knew that, and this is one of the reasons why in the middle of the summer ministers agreed that we will cut our gas consumption, because only by doing so, just lowering our demand, we can have a positive impact to the gas price that we will have this heating season.
Should countries actually move ahead with mandatory targets on reducing energy consumption? Because originally that's what the Commission suggested, but the member states are just saying this is voluntary.
Yes, but well, what we have seen is that several countries have met this target due to the reaction of households and businesses towards price signals. So. The fact that natural gas is...
All right. Whatever.
I mean, I'm reading a Deutsche Welle. Will the energy crisis spell the end for German bakeries? It says only large chains and successful artisan bakeries are likely to survive.
So there one you go. There's another thing that's going to come out of
big business is going to be fine because they have connections.
Well, they won't be necessarily fine, but they'll be the ones that come out of it.
Well, they're backed by liquidity, right? They're backed right. by what's it called? The they're just backed by money.
Yeah.
And so they're
they've got more, and they'll get them when all is said and done. When it comes time to reinvest, they're going to get, you know, once this crisis is over, because it will
right,
eventually
they'll cling to power.
They will still be there while everyone else will have gone out of business. Yeah.
And no one will come and help them.
Right.
It says here, if you want to buy what many believe is the most delicious bread in the city of Bonn, you have to plan well ahead. That's because the line in front of the Max Kugel Bakery is long. Bread lines. Look at that. Literal bread lines. The prices are high, too. The cost of a whole wheat loaf has just gone up by 80 cents to €6.60. That's about €2 more than the competition charges. But Max Kugel's customers in Bonn's affluent Südstadt district are buying his wares as if the Ukraine war and its impact on electricity, gas, and grain prices never happened. 32-year-old bakery owner is a little surprised. So it's all about like the feel-good story. Of course, this Deutsche Welle is government propaganda. This is the feel-good story about how they're surviving. Mm-hmm. It says in Germany of all places where bread is seen as much of a cultural asset as Goethe, soccer, or Mercedes-Benz, it's hard to imagine a traditional baker being forced to close their doors. But many of them are already calling for a government bailout. Only the very big and very small will manage to survive, Kugel predicts. With 13 employees working the oven and the counter, he views his bakery as a small business, although Kugel would certainly have what it takes to expand his concept, which is embodied by the slogan, quote, where there's only bread, written across each of the white paper bags used to package of the loaves. Every day, bakery makes 10 types of bread without preservatives or premixes. No cakes, no croissants. Kugel's business model is to focus on essentials. Focus is recipe, blah, 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 blah. Skyrocketing grain prices. This is the interesting part. It's not that increased energy and grain prices are giving Kugel a headache. At the end of September, the annual electricity bill will arrive in his mailbox with what is expected to be an exorbitant increase. The young entrepreneur had the foresight to raise his prices 4 weeks ago. It was only the second time he had increased prices since the company was founded. There are only surcharges for rye, wheat, and spelt, as well as sunflower and pumpkin seeds. We aren't dependent on conventional flour, which is often made from Ukrainian grain. We buy organic grain from Germany. But here, farmers held back their grain and waited for the price to go up on the commodity markets. This is another problem. Capitalist countries, liberal capitalist countries, do not have social solidarity. Mm. And with good reason, they don't get anything out of it. Well, there is no culture of social solidarity. So farmers in Germany are holding back their grain for speculative reasons, causing bread lines in the country. That's part of the story, too.
Right.
Says here, Germany has around 10,000 bakeries, with total sales worth almost 15 billion euros. The bakery trade is one of the country's most important economic sectors. In the land of bread lovers, each household consumes an average of 56 kilograms of bread and baked goods every year, according to the Central Bakers Association. But Kugel shakes his head in disbelief when he hears calls for the state to come to the aid of the struggling industry. Quote, "We bakers are always at the forefront when it comes to complaining," he said. "But it's others who have bigger problems. Throughout the COVID pandemic, bakeries remained open as they were classified as essential businesses. Restaurants had to close down and use up their financial reserves. Of course, we have very high energy consumption. There's no question about that. But for me, the bakers is complaining is completely overblown." So this guy is trying.
Oh, yeah. He's just basically giving the government's line here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, again, Deutsche Welle is just it's state propaganda, state-run media, even if it's ostensibly private. So this is actually like in Germany, the health of the baker industry is actually one of the first vital signs of something bad.
Right.
If the bakers are going out of business, then the rest, from the auto manufacturers to the people that build like little intricate electronic things, they're next. It says here, Jija, it says perhaps it's a possible glimpse of future of German bakers in Bad Schussenstadt's district. Max Kugel's specialist bakery shows that affluent bread lovers are prepared to pay more for a high quality.
Okay, affluent, great.
Lovely, yes, neat, yes, nice. That's all. What's the German pensioner in East Germany
thing? Right, like what about people that aren't affluent?
What about people that don't buy gastro organic
yeah,
bread?
Yeah, that aren't buying this artisanal bread stuff. Like, I love the not affluent people, right? What about the – it's like –
what
these,
are
like,
they supposed to do? What are the people that serve them going to do?
Well, the tone deafness of it is interesting because there was a time when people would be embarrassed to only talk about that, right? Like there was a time when the media question – even if you're sympathy, you only cared about your affluent neighborhood, your artisanal bread dealer or whatever. You would immediately see that there's like a bad look to talking like that, but they don't seem to see it anymore. They still don't seem to see it anymore.
What?
Or maybe they're only really worried about political opposition from the affluent or them complaining or something. I don't know. But, yeah. What about the non-affluent German who just needs bread, normal bread, not like artisanal?
Yeah, and I always say this, actually. There actually is a ton of hidden poverty in Germany, particularly in the East amongst the elderly. Mm-hmm. Elderly people in Germany live really badly compared to places like France. Mm-hmm. And that's because the government is run by deficit hawks.
Right.
Social Democrat or Christian Democratic Union, they are deficit hawks. And look at what it pays off at. Nothing. Like your economy is going to blow up anyway.
Yeah, you don't. That's the funny thing. Here's what's really interesting is decades of neoliberal conservative, really, sort of conservative.
No, I mean, this is what I – the
conservative
point I actually left
economics.
With left-wing parties all believe in supply-side economics in Europe since at least Mitterrand.
Right.
Mitterrand in the 90s and, of course, the Social Democratic Party in Germany. All of them embraced.
Since the wall came down, and American-style economic models have swept over the continent, maybe you've gotten some growth and some increase in the wealthy class, and you've also got an increase in wealth inequality and such, but you might have gotten a brief appearance of more affluence and wealth in your country. But look now, it did not guard you against any crisis. This issue now, and you find your economies are totally vulnerable. So what's the point? What's it worth?
Right, because
you bring in
neoliberalism. COVID, I mean, the French government, Macron, who is also a neoliberal, he's a deficit hawk too.
Oh, he's a huge neoliberal prime, practically.
Undermining labor rights in France, which have traditionally been very strong. Destroying a lot of wage increase, like all these problems that he's caused. But even he, during COVID, gave French workers and people that mm-hmm. were furloughed benefits that Americans can't even dream of. And so those people now have some money saved up to maybe weather some of these price increases, you know. But in Germany, it's not – they weren't so they weren't
and
look, so
– And price increases, again, like when you are up against hard commodity shortages, it more money isn't the issue. You need to fix that supply problem. You need to get that stuff. You know, so
well, more money can be the issue to an extent that you have more money to pay for the inflated prices, but
without any, without
but yeah, the
you're gonna it's gonna empty. Hit a spiral unless you actually
eventually
you actually fix your supply problem.
Eventually, you'll be like the British used to attack the Nazis for being socialists during the war, the rationing, saying that they didn't have cigarettes at the store. And they would actually put that, you know, the lowest common denominator propaganda through the BBC that certain Germans would get on their radio. But the Nazis, Goebbels responded by saying, yeah, you can only get 3 cigarettes apiece at the store. And yes, that's a socialistic measure. But in Britain, your store shelves are stocked with tobacco. And it's too expensive for anyone to afford. So no one gets to have cigarettes in Britain. In Germany, everyone gets 3. In Britain, like a couple of rich people get them all. So that's the trade-offs you have to make. So there's got to be trade-offs at some point with energy. The problem is, in certain parts of Europe, if you're rationing energy, people are going to fucking die.
Yes.
People are going to die.
Yeah.
So, like, what the hell is the solution
here? I'm very curious. I mean, this is – what's funny is this Nord Stream pipeline story has been relatively – it's been out there, but there are things that are trumping it in the headlines, including this woman that was killed by this black in Memphis. But,
yeah.
Which we could talk about in a little bit. But,
we'll talk about it a little bit.
But this seems to me to be a massive story. And I remember hearing that over the weekend while we were doing our thing. Somebody just mentioned it. Like, oh, yeah, Russia's, like, totally cutting them off. And I was like, wait, what? And we were, like, at the event and people were discussing it. Having looked at the news, I hadn't seen the news in a couple of days because of all the prep we were doing for the event. And I was like, wow, they're going to be so fucked. I was just like, oh, my God, dude, I don't even know what they're going to do. I can't even imagine what they're going to do. And, yeah, it's like they're going to be – I was like, people are going to be, like, chopping – going in the forest and, like, just chopping wood illegally and just, like, hoarding
people
all kinds
of
anything.
People are going to be stealing energy. Like
they're going to be stealing different stuff. Yeah. They're going to be siphoning gas. They're going to be – they're going to be stealing wood.
They're
going to be
cutting down trees on your property.
Yes, they're going to be going into government forests and cutting down trees. They're going to be going to public land. They're going to be doing all this stuff. People are going to fire up the wood burning furnaces that have been, you know, not a lot of houses in Germany probably have them. They haven't used them in a while, but they've got them.
And what's sad is that the most vulnerable people won't be able to do it.
Right.
They're not going to be able to do it. So people that are, you know, old or disabled or people like that, they're just going to be left to dry.
The country people are going to be able to weather it better.
Yes.
Because they're going to be surrounded by nature, which they can use to their benefit if they need to. They'll be able to burn wood and heat their homes with that. They'll be able to hunt animals and stuff like that. I mean, it sounds crazy, but people are literally going to have to go back to nature, depending on how bad it gets.
Right.
But people, as always,
compare it to the Hunger Games, which is something I've never even seen. But
it's different because that's like a. Well, there was this – in the Hunger Games, there was these societies where the people did revert to like hunting squirrels and stuff to supplement their diets in these working – in these sort of little working class cities where they were keeping people. Hunger Games actually is good. It's
really?
Actually not bad. Yeah. It's – well,
because I never saw it.
It's
so
a society where the elites are all like decadent faggots and they actually keep all the workers –
So it's a documentary.
Right. They keep – what they do is they keep the workers actually in racially separated like cantons. So there's like the white one and then there's like a black one and they're like – then there's like a Mexican one. They actually got a lot of criticism for this in after the movies came out, you know. And of course the hero is this really scrappy girl from like the white working area and she knows how to hunt. So her family gets more food because she's hunting deer and squirrels and stuff. And and they're literally all these evil decadent faggots. Like they're all dressed in like drag, like flowery drag and stuff like that. All the elites in the cities. And they have these games and then where the workers like, so they send one representative to fight for the amusement of these people.
Right.
And then they turn on them and like kill them. And so it's actually not bad. If I had kids, I would totally let them read the Hunger Games. And many white nationalists I know that have kids are like, like the Hunger Games is okay in our household. So yeah.
I mean, it's really, clueless and out of touch. It's like, oh, look at this one boutique bakery that's doing just fine.
Yeah.
Because it caters to the rich.
Right. Yeah.
What about everyone else in Germany?
Yeah. It's very strange.
What about all that mob of unemployed brown people they imported? Like, what the fuck are they going to do? Like, they're
the more likely to riot because they don't have any.
Well, not just that, but also the charity infrastructure. And I saw this with my own fucking eyes in Germany when I lived there. The charity infrastructure, when I was there, the charity infrastructure, like Caritas and all these like Catholic charities that, you know, they do good work, you know, like the Catholic charity in Bavaria used to go around and give and bring meals to elderly Germans and help people out with their bills and stuff. As soon as all the migrants came in, military age, able-bodied men, all that charitable infrastructure was completely reoriented to serving these people. And their charity workers would go into these camps. And first of all, you got like fucking 25-year-old.
You're getting like assaulted and shit.
First of all, 25-year-old horny men. They haven't seen a woman, and they see a blonde woman come up to them, and they want to rape her. I mean, this is what it is. This is what these people are. They just came up from the jungle, and they want to do that. And you know, the charity workers are being assaulted or harassed, or they were getting like giving them like fruits and stuff, and the people there were like, "What the fuck am I supposed to do with this? I want a steak. I want a fucking
right." They want like meat.
I want something. I want real food. I don't want pasta and bananas. I want a fucking actual meal.
Yeah.
And so like the entitlement, all that, and so like tons and tons of problems created by this that are going to possibly come to the surface.
Well, I mean, if they need to, and the conceit there was like, well, Germans are all fine, which wasn't true, but they're like, well, Germans are all doing fine, so we can do this. But now that. In some level, like the fact that they have to cater, and then, you know, any institution that starts having to cater to those kinds of people becomes almost impossible to access for anybody else.
Yes.
And they develop all these rules around like security and vetting people to make sure you're not getting ripped off and all this stuff when you wouldn't have to do that if you were just catering to a European population. And they have to make sure that they keep women away and things like that, where you wouldn't have to do that.
Right.
Or do that as much.
Right.
Frankly, people just aren't going to volunteer. I was actually having a conversation about some of this stuff today with Borzoi, and even making some interesting points where he was talking about how like a lot of this stuff with whites and libtards and this racial stuff and like this altruism that they show and stuff. It's like, he's like, one of the reasons that they don't like us so much, a lot of it is because like, we're just telling them the brutal truth and like combining the actual truth with what they're supposed to say for their luxury beliefs and their high status beliefs. It's like the dissonance just can't handle it. Like, he's like, it's not that they love them, it's that they would like to believe that these people can change and that they can change them. And we say, no, you can't change them, this is a waste, you shouldn't do this, but that's, you can't have that view and still be in the elite. And so they're like, even though they know it's true, so these people are just like paralyzed in this place. But in the end, ultimately,
the reality is the reality.
And what happens is, then what they do is they retreat. They just retreat from it.
I mean, so, the reason why the American experiment, the primary reason the American experiment will fail, is failing, is because of the religious view on race.
Yeah.
If you have a religious
biggest weakness of the system,
completely decoupled from observable empirical scientific reality.
Well, if your entire society
unattached to this, unpegged from it.
If your entire society is built upon and predicated upon proving something to be true that is not true. And people will be punished for pointing out that it's not true. I mean, it's like literally The Emperor's New Clothes is one of the greatest lessons, but it seems to be continuing to repeat itself. What's so funny is that people that would actively read, it's really funny, people that like read would teach their kids about The Emperor's New Clothes won't see it in their, that it's actually happening here. People that will talk about 1984 won't see what's actually happening with the censorship and the newspeak that we have, right? It's really interesting how it's like these things are like almost frozen in time for people. And what's the best is when libtards use those stories as like only ever applying to conservatism or something like that, or vice versa, right?
Well, what's really fascinating is a number of things that go towards this. For example, there's a fascinating piece in The Atlantic about how actually blacks don't really live in cities anymore. They live in the suburbs. And the
cities are just empty.
Yes, they don't live in the cities. If anything, the cities have gotten whiter in the last 20 to 30 years. And this guy has actually studied all this stuff about, it says here, in researching black suburbanization, I initially focused on the households that moved. I imagined them bravely striking out, pushing through unfair and biased policies. He's talking about redlining.
Okay, well, I want to just, before I want to point one thing out. Before you go on, I want to talk about this, but I want to point one thing out. I said this, I have been saying this for at least a year now, that the suburbs are now black too.
Yeah.
That it's not, it's like the perception that moving to a suburb will get you away. You have to move out to the country now.
Yes.
And there's country blacks like down south and stuff, but they're not really in like the other parts of the country. You don't really get country blacks up north. You get them down south, but you don't get them up here. But you get, suburban blacks are everywhere. And this was even happening when I was a kid.
And they're more vicious because the police aren't as well funded in suburbs as they are in cities.
Right, and they're more they're smaller police forces, and they're more subject to political stuff because they're not as strong of unions and all that shit. Yeah, so
yes, and so really, the story of the last 50 years is that one of the reasons why crime fell in the '90s, in particular, '90s into 2000s, is simply because blacks were moved out of New York City, moved out of Boston, moving out of these places, and moving out to the suburbs. You'll find that the problem of crime simply migrated and was made more disparate in terms of or rather dispensed in a way that it's over a wider plane. So there's less crime concentrated in a city, but there's more crime spread out.
Right.
And that's following the
migration.
But that
makes it more people's problems. And I mean, we had where I grew up, you know, Warren always says that he was surprised because I always told him I grew up in this pretty affluent upper middle class suburb in New Jersey. But then when I'm like, because he grew up, you know, in a relatively poor area in West Virginia, but it was all white. But I grew up in a relatively affluent area of New Jersey, and it was like half black. And I dealt with blacks my whole life. Like, there were 40% of my high school, you know, always the unruly kids were always black. Like, growing up, there's always just black kids acting up, causing problems, you know, starting fights, you know, being disrespectful to everybody. You know, just like my whole life, I saw it, right? And this actually surprised him because he's like, well, I thought you grew up like pretty well off. I was like, I did. That's not the, you know, that's,
Another fascinating thing that black suburbanization, basically a government policy or just even a real estate policy, banking policies, that push middle class, middle income black households to the suburbs, is that lower socioeconomic blacks are stuck in the cities, becoming even more depraved.
Oh yeah, no, they're don't get it wrong. Like, there's still black crime in the cities, and they've really gone crazy.
And it's actually over the top. If you actually
these days, it's just out of control.
You were to peg like crime in New Orleans. I mean, that like the mayor of New Orleans was saying not long ago, like, yeah, crime's up. But like, you remember when niggas was doing in the '60s? Because you know the mayor of New Orleans is Mayor Cottrell, who was like a real ratchet ass, like she boon. Like, she was like. There's like videos of the mayor of New Orleans like beating some girl up in a fucking bathroom and shit. Like, there's like have you been following this shit? Like,
no.
You know, and they're asking her like, yo, what are you doing about this incredible crime? I mean, there's a video that I think we played it on here of like blacks like walking in the street like in the middle of the intersection, holding guns out, like shooting them in the air and just like just hanging out, like dozens of them brandishing firearms. I bet 90% of those people doing it are felons. In broad daylight, filming it, putting it on the internet. And people were like showing this to her. They're like, yo, what the hell is this? Why is this happening in New Orleans? This is like something that happens in Somalia.
Yeah, dude, they're praising her for in June. AllHipHop.com, best mayor ever. New Orleans mayor breaks up fight at the ladies' room at rap concert.
Yeah,
all right, I want to see. All right, hold on.
Yeah. She's like pushing around a woman in a bathroom at a rap concert. She's the mayor of New Orleans.
Okay, hold on. We got to watch this. Hold up.
No, I mean, this is incredible. You
this is, oh, Lord. Oh, Lord, they're coming. Lord, they're coming. Oh my god, this unruly blacks just drives me nuts.
Right, the mayor is like up in the mixture up there. Like,
yeah, it's just one of them. It was funny because they're like, all these girls, like, she don't know who she is. It's like, why should she?
Right.
She's another one. She just sees another person of her same class and race.
Right.
another ratchet-ass nigger woman in the bathroom, that fucking
retarded nigger was like going around, like, people were like asking, like, yo, what are you doing about crime? Your anti-police measures are actually undermining the fight against crime in New Orleans, and now we have more shootings than we did in 1995. And she goes, yeah, well, in 1995, niggas was like, she was like talking like that. She's like, there's more shootings in 1995 than now, which is technically correct. But what she doesn't talk about is that, like, one third of the population of New Orleans left after Katrina, and furthermore, like the black population fell by like 40%, and so like there's just a shit ton less black people in New Orleans than there was in 1995, and yet shooting rates and murder rates are approaching parity with it. So it's more per capita, like the concept of per capita. Yeah.
Look at this headline.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She walked into a court like some black kid shot up a bunch of people, and the mayor walked like, into the court as an expert witness. Yeah, as an expert witness to support the fucking juvenile perpetrator.
Crime victims say they felt victimized all over again when Mayor LaToya Cantrell showed up in court to support a juvenile perpetrator during sentencing.
Yeah, as Natasha Robin reports, the victims say they're angry and they want an explanation.
Just like makes you feel like, you know,
as the face of the city, that she does
not care about the victims.
No, she doesn't care about you because you're white.
Disbelief when they say Mayor LaToya Cantrell showed up in court to support the juvenile who carjacked them.
I was in shock. She wasn't there for us. She was there.
She's not there for you. You're white. You're white.
Right.
The assaultant and his mother, and she it felt like she was supporting the crime.
She was.
Your own mayor, like, isn't. Like in supporting you.
Both women became
victims. It's time
victims
to join the National Justice Party then.
Right.
That's what
right.
It's time to do.
I can tell from her accent that she's upper class.
She got money, obviously. Yeah. You can see her jewelry, the way she dressed.
Yeah. Yep. And she can't believe that.
She can't believe these uppity.
Like her mayor is literally anti-white racist that doesn't think and that carjacking and that a white
these niggers are finally getting into her business. That's unbelievable to her. Oh right. My God.
Well, that's
we're
the mayor.
So nice to them. How did this
that's
happen?
That's the mayor. That's the mayor of your fucking city, and she says that you're white. You don't have rights.
Right. What are you going to do?
You don't have rights. Literally, she's going to go in and personally intervene in a court case and get the black perpetrator off, which she did.
And she did.
That's all she wrote. So you don't like it? Too bad. The only thing you have is the NJP.
Yeah, you're going to have to respond to that kind of black racial solidarity with white racial solidarity.
Mayor Cantrell literally is openly racist against white people. And, you know, openly racist black mayors are like the new normal. Like, that's the mayor of Chicago, the mayor of Los Angeles. I mean, I'm sorry, of St. Louis, the mayor of New Orleans. The mayor of Atlanta. These are
well, the mayor of D.C.
Mayor of D.C. What's her name? Bowser, is it? In D.C.?
I don't know. Mayor of Chicago, the Beetlejuice looking woman, actually, I'm not defending her. She tries to. Well, here's the thing. She doesn't signal that she's in support of it. She signals, like, oh, we need to stop it and we have to do something and begs for more government money and intervention in the city and all this shit. It never happens. But she's a lesbian married to a Jewish woman.
Yeah.
So, like, again, she's got a foot in the other camp there, if you will. So she's, like, that's Lori Lightfoot. Yeah, she's not, again, no, she's totally a piece of shit, scumbag. But she's not like a, ratchet negress that's just like openly.
Yeah, it's like fighting women in the bathroom of a rap concert. Yeah,
Lori Lightfoot wouldn't go into court. If some nigger like carjacked white people, Lori Lightfoot wouldn't be going into court to like stick up for them. But like she wouldn't necessarily do, she in fact complains that Kim Fox would. That's the thing. Her district attorney would. She's like that. And so she's always complaining about it. So it's just like, none of these people are going to do anything for you. And then some of them are actively hostile to you.
Some of them are like egregiously, like don't even have the respect to put on an act. Like that's just a total lack of respect.
What are they saying here? Answers critics on violent crime. Oh, play. Yeah. I want to see if this incredible. Is what this is what you're talking
about. Of not understanding the scope of the violent crime problem.
They also say she won't admit there is a crime problem. So what does the mayor say? Cantrell spoke with Moving New Orleans Forward anchor LBJ.
Yeah, Susie and current Mayor Cantrell was adamant about understanding. Yes, yeah, she understands the problem, she says. But she also says that critics barking from the outside are not helping the problem.
So what the fuck?
Get involved.
Their contention is that you don't understand the scope of the violent crime problem here in our city. To what do you say, Mayor Cantrell?
When I hear that, it's an insult, quite frankly. Me not understanding what's happening on the ground and in this city, having been a crisis mayor since day one in public safety, has not been separated from that. Being a black woman, raising a black daughter in the city of New Orleans, having experienced crime firsthand myself.
Mayor LaToya Cantrell addressed criticism from council members earlier this week about her administration's inaction on violent crime in the city. Cantrell also pointed to the success of several social programs dealing with system-involved young people,
right.
Like today's graduation of the Summer Success Program and youth employment this summer.
That's meeting our young people where they are. That is treating root causes to ensure that they stay on and get on a path.
Yeah, right.
So that they can reach their fullest potential. I was there. You know who wasn't there? And where I've never seen the council members that you mentioned show up at anything relative to prevention.
Because they're afraid.
Intervention, as well as response.
Our city is being in crisis in terms of violent crime. Do you consider it a crisis, Mayor?
So absolutely we know the numbers. We know the families. They're not just a number. We know the impact that it has on our community. Trauma is real. Hurt people hurt people.
In order for our city to operate effectively, fight violent.
That's good enough. I don't get the exact quote, but it's the same attitude. Yeah.
These are the people in charge of some of America's most iconic cities.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember. I mean, you're older than me. Do you remember people like this? I mean, I know that there's the mayor of D.C. smoking crack and shit. But
yeah,
like,
I remember like Marion Barry and shit like that. And there like hoodlum
Dickens,
mayors.
Dickens was another
one.
Well,
the usual thing was those mayors, though, like Marion Barry and like Sharp James in Newark, like they were just fucking corrupt. Like they only gave a shit about money. They weren't like they were just criminals. Like they weren't like. They wouldn't have been like this, right? Like, they would never have apologized.
They weren't woke.
Yeah, they weren't woke. They were just like, they just were just on the take, you know? Like, they just were the criminals themselves, right? And Marion Barry didn't care. Yeah, he got caught smoking crack or whatever, and that was just what he did, you know? But they were just corrupt. They were just, money, bribes, and stuff like that. And they would work with whites. They would work with whites and blacks to be corrupt. They didn't care, and Jews or whatever, right?
Well, when I was,
they weren't, like,
college.
Overtly like that, yeah.
When I was in college, I had a mayor called – I mean, not a mayor. He was like a city councilman or something, and he taught a class, a mandatory class. It was called Race and Society. That's when I first started seeing woke stuff. It was like the second or third year of college.
Mm-hmm.
This black guy, his name is Larry Seabrook. You can look him up online.
I've heard of him.
He used to hate my fucking guts because, of course, I used to walk in my fucking white power T-shirts and my – I mean, you could do that back then.
Right. They wouldn't remove you. They wouldn't – these days they would remove you for that.
There was another white guy there, and he was like this skinny white guy, and he would like also like take the same positions as me.
He was like moralized by you being there.
me speaking up. Like I would just sit in the back of the class like smiling – as like the two or three white men in the class, there weren't many white men in the class, as they started like just going off on this nigger, like just being like, oh yeah, well how do you explain, like, you know, he was like, yeah, because the white man did this to the Native Americans and we're living on occupied land. And then this fucking kid just fucking pipes up and said, oh yeah, well all they had was sticks and worshipped you know, they worshipped trees. And
that's
like,
could have pissed them off so much.
Yeah, you know, you could just blurt shit out like that 10 years ago in school, and they,
I remember that kind of stuff. I remember that kind of stuff in those kind of classes when I was a kid too. You'd have kids saying that stuff even in my high school. I remember
he wasn't a kid, it was better their 20s, early 20s, but still.
Oh yeah, but even in my high school, I remember in diversity stuff, like kids would blurt that kind of stuff out. Like they would say, like, the blacks don't ever care for themselves, why should we care for them? And then like or that stuff like that about natives. And it was always like most kids wouldn't do it, but you would get kids that would. And they'd inevitably be more working class and like the upper middle class kids.
Yeah, CUNY, like working class CUNY students, like white student, like some Irish guy, like that guy was like some Irish kid. And he was like, yeah, well, you know what? Maybe you should, you know, maybe black people should stop, like, you know, just stuff
Dude,
like that.
What's so funny is
you
when there's the one working class white kid.
There would be a few that would get really excited, like Larry Seabrook. But anyway, my story about Larry Seabrook was that, like, a few years later, after this class, he gave me an A, by the way. He gave me an A. You know why he gave me an A?
Because an A.
Because this motherfucker, he gave everyone an A. You know why? Because he didn't actually read your fucking papers.
Right. That's what I'm saying. He just gave everybody an A.
Like, I could have just, like,
blamed. He probably didn't even know what your name was.
I probably saw your name.
He's like, that sounds like a nigga name.
No, he just gave everyone. No, you know what though? You know what I give him credit for? He was an equal opportunity negligent professor.
Right.
So it was obvious he was there because he was in a city council. He was in a city council. I'm looking up on Wikipedia. City council for Williams Bridge, East Chester, like parts of the Bronx and shit. And he was on the city council while he taught. It was definitely some sort of you scratch my back, I scratch your back, some sort of thing where he's just – it's like a no-show job that they gave him. And later on, a few years later, I opened up the New York Post, and he's got federal indictments on corruption charges where he was like writing off like a coffee and a bagel as a
political – everything was written off.
For like $100 and shit. Like, but anyway, this black dude – he used to come to class like dressed like Cedric the Entertainer, like Stacy Adams shoes, fucking pastel suits. Like he used to wear his fedora hat in class and take it off, and he'd wear like an overcoat, like real snazzy black guy. And me and him, like, I would just be blurting out like shit that I say on this show in that class, and he would just look at me funny. He's like, I gotta disagree. Anyone else? Like, you just.
He didn't really give a
probably
shit.
Probably because he was getting that job as a no-show job. Yeah. He was doing illegal shit. He didn't want to blow the spot up.
He didn't
up,
really care that much either. It's like, whatever.
Right. I miss those blacks. We need those blacks back. Well, they're far less destructive than these woke black women.
Well, that's the thing. Like, blacks that are like – and what's funny is you've now got the ratchet-ass Negress being the woke one. Like, it's like a combination of woke and ratchet that's truly toxic.
Right.
But, like, you know, you – yeah, those old type blacks, I mean.
Yeah, Larry Seabrook was awesome. Like, I didn't go to half the classes. Like, and the times I did, it was just to say racist shit. It was fucking awesome. And he gave me an A. So, like, I give him a lot of credit. I had another teacher who was, I don't know, some sort of Filipino or something, who I had to take another stupid class like that. And she gave me a C.
Right.
Even though I was the best student in the class, arguably.
Right.
And,
right. You got to watch the light-skinned woke people the most.
Right, right. Because
they're going to be the most out for the racial revenge.
Oh, shit. Larry Seabrook's on
Dude,
Lincoln
like,
now.
Like an older dark-skinned nigger I'm not going to be that worried about in that situation.
There it is. This is his Rape My Professor. I found his Rape My Professor. Because I went to –
give him
to
an A.
This is John Jay. Yeah, I went there for a year. It says here, quality. These are the reviews. Yo, this is mad funny. Quality 1.5, difficulty 1.0. It says, do not waste money on the books. You will not use them. Every easy class, he talks about the same thing every day, mostly about how he still seeks compensation from slavery. But whatever, so easy. If you can sit through his blabbering nonsense and videos, you'll do fine. do not waste your money on the book.
That was Larry Seabrook.
I never got the book. See, I was smart.
He looks like right here, he looks like the absolute typical black New York City councilman with, like, you can't even, his suit doesn't even look that great. I can't tell. Looks like he got a pinstripe suit with the overcoat. Every black New York City councilman in the wintertime loves showing up with some big overcoat. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Walk around. He was dressed snazzy. No, I have to be honest. He dressed really well. It says here, you know, here's another review. Quality 2.0, difficulty 1.0. Yo, I used to actually compliment him in class. I'm like, yo, Mr. Seabrook, looking good, man. He's like, yeah, thank you. I got this suit the other day.
Here we go. Look at this one. Look at this one. Oh, man. He's like, that's one small. Let's see. Look at that. He's got that pink tie and everything. That's a kind of a low rise. Oh, shit. Here we go. Here's Larry Seabrook with some pimp niggas.
Yeah, man. Look, I'm nostalgic. That's an entourage.
Yeah, that's like this is like a New York City, black New York City councilman to the T. Always, like, always showing up with these type niggas. Like,
they always roll deep. And they're respecting my friend, a good friend of mine who's like all into dressing nice. He tells me, so you can't wear a straw hat after this day. It's straw hat day or some shit like that. And these black guys, they respect that. Like, they actually is like, yo,
well, look at this bow tie day. Straw hat. Like, this is very.
You don't wear a felt hat after a certain day. You got to wear straw hats. And they, this guy always rolls deep, man. I'm so nostalgic for blacks like that. Those were better times, you know.
Yeah.
So look at this review over here from Ray.
The blacks, they were just about like the banter and shit. They wasn't like all. Yeah.
No, he goes. He's a bad professor. He doesn't teach what is supposed to be taught in class. This class is useless. We bought two textbooks and we never use them. It's just a waste. See, I would have given him a 5 out of 5 because I just got this stupid mandatory course. Yeah, like, course, I mean,
if that's a mandatory course.
He didn't do shit like everyone get up if you're white and check your pill. He didn't do that shit.
Right, yeah.
He just showed up to class, put on a movie, and then left for an hour. And then,
yeah,
like,
I had an art teacher like that. He was actually a good artist.
It's surreal to see it in a college class, though. Like, that shit is,
well, I had,
like,
this black art teacher in high school named Mr. Struther, Lonnie Struther. And he was a heroin addict. And he would fall asleep and, like, drool on himself in class. He put on a movie. It was actually kind of sad, dude. But he would just put on movies about, like, classical architecture and then go to sleep. And we'd look at, the kids would be looking at him, like, what's going on? And they'd be like, kids that knew would be like, he's on methadone. I was like, oh my god, dude. But he would always come up to the kids that were good at art, and he'd be like, you are the most promising young black artist in the town. And it was always like a white kid, because it was always like the white kids that were doing good art and stuff. And it was like, obviously he had some issues with that, but yeah.
No, I mean, but the thing is, like, when Mr. Seabrook, Professor Seabrook, like, I would also, like, aside from, like, inciting blacks in class, I would also, like, be trying to talk about Jews. I'd be like, yo, Mr. Seabrook, like, you keep talking about, you know, all this shit about slavery and stuff, but I got this book in my bag because I had all the Nation of Islam
Nation
books,
of Islam shit, yeah.
And I brought one of the class, and I'm like, you know, I got this book in my class. Can I read a passage from it? And he's like, oh, Joe, wait up, Joey, wait up. He's like, I know what's in there, but...
Like, well, he knows who he's going to get.
Is this a race and ethnicity class? Why don't we read for black authors on this question? And he would be like, yeah, I know what you mean, man, but sign the curriculum. I'm sorry. You can't read from that book. And everyone in the class is cracking up. There's like some Jewish kid in there. And he used to – honestly, the Jewish kid was the one that was the most, like, activated by me. Even when I talk about blacks, it was the fucking Jew kid that was always up on my shit.
Of course.
And he's like, what do you mean by that? What the hell do you mean by that?
Of course.
You sound like a fucking Nazi. And I'm like, well, or just give him a sly little Pepe smile. It says here, listen to this review. It says, just like the person below me said, do not wait to give your presentation. He's pretty easy and he's always late.
Yeah.
So make sure this is your last class. Make friends in the class because he doesn't know anyone's name. So you could tell your friend to sign your name on the attendance sheet and switch off. He's a politician, so he's busy. and sometimes he forgets what he says. Yeah. Let's see. He's got like, it's hilarious because the reviews are a mix of like 5-star reviews and 1-star reviews. Because some of the kids, yeah. Put up there.
Yeah, no, sorry. $177 bagel. Sometimes the New York Post, as much as I hate them, I have funny ass headlines.
Yo. It says, oh, there's something in the New York Observer about this. It says, what happens to Professor Seabrook? It says, Larry Seabrook charged by federal. He says, Seabrook is an adjunct professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Insert ironic joke here. He teaches in the African American Studies Department. I called the spokesperson for the school and asked if Seabrook was still teaching there. They told me they'd get back to me. Oh, man. Dude. See, this is fucking hilarious. Like, I'm not offended by this. I'm not offended. It's like what you were saying in the speech. When Jews – like when the government is dispensing money for COVID – you know, or trying to forgive your student loans, you don't go and create highfalutin responses to that. You just take their money.
Right.
Take their money.
Yeah.
Councilman Seabrook knows it better than most white people do.
Well, just blacks are better about this on a distinctive level. Because dude, they see resources, they grab them. They see stuff, they take. They're hunter-gatherers inherently. Now, white people do this.
Also, they have a distrust of a system that doesn't serve them necessarily in their minds.
Well, they've been told it doesn't serve them.
Right,
I mean, if you told white people
should feel.
The problem is, what's happening now is I think white people are going to start changing. And I think it's already starting to happen based on the responses we're getting, is that white people are learning that the system doesn't serve us. We were told that it did for a long time. And we were even told that it did at the expense of blacks. But now the entire system is telling us we're evil.
Yes.
And it's impossible. And it's telling us at the same time that we're evil that it also serves us. But people don't feel like they're served by it because they don't actually get served by it. They are told you get privileges, but then they don't get any.
Right.
And that's why you always get these people that teach white privilege going around like, I am trying to teach my white privilege class and these working poor class and poor whites won't believe me.
Right.
And I have to teach them particularly. And I have to do the invisible knapsack and all that bullshit. And they still don't get it. Why? And it's like, well, they don't get it because it's bullshit.
Yes. And on some level, the cynical Larry Seabrooks of the world knew that.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, you can't hate the hustle.
No.
You know, like
don't
he's
hate
just,
the player.
Why should he do anything differently? As long as he's not like actively hurting white people, whatever.
Player. He's some money from the Jew tax base in New York City. Oh, big whoop.
So it's probably Jews that are complaining about how inefficient. Like, this guy's not a good enough racial studies professor.
Right, right.
He's not actually blackpilling these white kids. He's letting them have AIDS because he doesn't know who they are.
It's so funny. Now that I remember, it's true. Like, I used to skip half the classes because I just get, like, some kid to fucking sign me in and just, like,
he probably didn't even look at the attendance sheet, dude.
He didn't even read the books on his curriculum.
He didn't care. He just...
I never bought the book in the curriculum.
He showed up for class late. He led half-hearted discussion and then gave everybody
I'd come in from Queens, and I'd be, like, 45 minutes late to the class, and I'd be like, oh, shit, thank God I got a black professor, because...
Do you think this nigger was reading your papers?
I mean, I can't possibly think that because he gave me
on all of them. I can't imagine that he ever read anybody's paper. Why? Right. I mean, this does not look like he have any interest in doing that.
Bro.
He wants to go and play cards and like drink cognac and shit after fucking work. He is not going to fucking read your papers.
He's getting back to his white pussy and his fucking suits and at the bar in Manhattan.
Yeah, no, this is the type of nigger that sits in a bar playing cards and drinking cognac and smoking cigars and shit.
Hanging out with like a white prostitute. Like, like that's what it is, you know. I mean, that's the hustle, man. That's what it is. You can say what you want, you can hate the player, but that's what it is. You know, I mean, but
the woke shit is entirely different. Like, the woke shit is like no fun for everybody. No one has fun. Like,
yeah,
I say let these type
black
of blacks
people don't
be
have
themselves.
Fun either, because black people want to steal from the woke shit, but Jews slap them on the hand, as we saw with the BLM guy.
Well, the black people that just want to be raw criminals are having fun. Like, the ones that just want to like violently attack and shoot and murder and rob.
Right.
The niggas that just
the ones that want to steal from the system directly are having trouble. Because believe it or not, yes, the feds are on the side of BLM. They're on the side of the criminals. They're on the side of the anti-whites. But they also understand that these people, it's like why Bernie Madoff got in trouble. There's tons and tons of Jews that are doing pyramid schemes as we speak, stealing people's pensions, stealing their hard-earned money in investment scams and just walking away with it. They're constantly people. Bernie Madoff's problem is he was ripping off Steven Spielberg and ripping off prominent Jews.
Yeah.
That's why he got in trouble.
There was a Jew that I used to work with at this company in New York City. It was some stupid startup in Tribeca or whatever, and there was only a few people that worked there, and this Jew worked there, and he was so mad about the Bernie Madoff thing. He was even like one day, because it was near that, there's a prison down there in Tribeca, you know what I'm talking about? There's actually a New York City prison down in Tribeca. They had Bernie Madoff there for a little bit. He was like, anybody want to go down there with me and yell at Bernie Madoff as they're moving him from the cop car? Because he even knew what the schedule was. He's like, they're going to move him from this prison to another one or whatever. So he's going to be briefly out exposed to the public in handcuffs. Anyone want to come down there and yell at me? A bunch of me and a bunch of my friends are going down there and scream at him. And he went down there on his lunch hour to do that. No one else went. No one else gave a fuck because they weren't Jewish. But I was like, I remember you talking to this kid. I was like, why this guy though? Like this of all the people pisses you off. Like he was, and I even said he was just ripping off a bunch of rich people. What the fuck do I care? And that, like, he couldn't, of course, he didn't want to admit what the issue there was. I was kind of trying to get him to to acknowledge why, and probably, like, annoyed him by just referring to the Jews as just a bunch of rich people.
I mean, but one thing I want to say, you know, thinking back on my experience in this class, is that actually all of the whites, the non-Jewish whites in the class, were very combative when hearing the woke racial stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, was that just a particular New York thing, or was this the experience of everyone in the country?
I think that when that shit was being rolled out, they had a lot of pushback. Because you saw, we've seen, like, and I think what they realized was, like, the people you're going to be most successful with that stuff are going to be more affluent whites and people that you're going to get early. With like brown eyes, blue eyes, shit, and you gotta start early from before they're fully consciously formed as people, so that you can like fill their heads up with it. Because when I was a kid, they were filling our. Now, what's funny is I didn't get as much Holocaust stuff as a lot of people have reported getting. We got tons of MLK stuff, tons of Black people stuff, tons of civil rights stuff in my school, and so by the time even given all of that. By the time we were in high school and they were doing diversity day, white kids were still pushing back on it. And I remember there was even like they did a feminism thing once, and all the boys pushed really hard back on it. They were leading a discussion in the next class, which I got kicked out of for how hard back I was pushing on all this shit. And so like people would push back. And even though my town was like affluent, it wasn't all rich. There was a working class side of town. And those kids would always be talking about how, like, they would be saying things like, why don't blacks stop shooting each other? They would just say that. And the teachers would get so upset. And then, like, the people who were on their way to being, like, the woke libtards, like the girl, usually goody-two-shoes type girls, they were all going to go to good schools and came from rich families. They would be like, oh, my God, you can't say that.
Right.
And like, you know, but kids would be like, I remember one time I was at some event after school, maybe it was even a party, and this one girl who wasn't Jewish, but she had a lot of Jewish friends. She was a WASPy girl, super rich, very wealthy WASPy chick. And me and my friend was like, well, look, if there's a bird and it doesn't fly as well as the other birds, you know, like he was using some evolution metaphor, and she was like, oh my god, I can't believe you're saying that. And he was like, no, but he's like, I'm just saying, like, they're just not as suited to the kinds of things that we're doing. Like, it's not their fault, but it's just how they are. And he's like, you don't blame. And he had some evolution there. So he wasn't a stupid guy. And me and him were sitting there, and this girl was like freaking out. She couldn't believe we were saying this stuff. So yeah, people used to push back on this stuff, dude.
So
white kids used to push back on it.
I don't know if you've been following Jackson, Mississippi, which is the capital of Mississippi. They haven't had water.
Yes, I've heard about this.
Since August 29th.
Jesus.
They don't have running water in the city.
Right.
And this is an 82% black city. It's had black mayors since the 90s. And it's also one of the most violent cities in America. So it says here, 2021 homicide rate, 97.6 per 100,000 residents.
That's
Do you
a
know
lot.
What that is? Do you know
Holy
what that
shit.
Is? That is double the fucking murder rate of El Salvador.
So wait, 97 per 1,000?
96.0 per 100,000.
Okay.
That's still insane.
Yeah.
It's one of the most violent cities in the world. And it, like I said, twice as dangerous as El Salvador. So you can get an idea.
Fox News is saying Jackson, Mississippi water pressure restored to, quote, normal for most residents. I doubt it.
Apparently, like, the water has also been poisoned for decades. Like, you can't drink it.
Yeah, this is like a Flint type situation. Oh, there's people now saying, oh, the whole Flint thing was bullshit or something. I haven't even looked into those claims. I doubt it. I have no reason to believe that a city like Flint did not have all these problems, right? And I wonder what that type of thing
is. No. That's more conservative covering for, because they want to make it into a privatization.
Well, here we go. Look at this. Yeah.
Socialism.
Look at this. Mississippi governor on Jackson water crisis. Privatization is on the table.
There you go.
Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves said that he's open to numerous long-term options in an effort to restore the city of Jackson, Mississippi's water system, adding that privatizing the system is on the table. Well, here's a question. Why is this the place where this has to happen?
Well, privatization can only be an advantage in the water system if your government locally is run by Africans and you just contract white people from outside.
Right.
Because private.
That's the only way that could happen. Now, that started. They've been doing that kind of shit in Detroit for a long time. And one of the things that pissed people in Detroit off was Detroit had this problem where they had a lot of city workers who had pensions. And there was a fund to pay those workers' pensions, and a lot of them were white because they had been working there since before the city completely crashed, and some of them worked there even up until the 80s and 90s, and then they left. But they still had their pension, and they were government workers, so they figured they would get that pension, right? Because they figured that's a secure – but no. So they started raiding that pension fund to pay contractors because blacks couldn't keep the city infrastructure up. And then at one point, the Detroit Art Museum, like, rich people came in and they just, like, looted the art museum. They had, like, an auction that the city, and people were really mad about this because there was, like, this big public museum with all this great art. And they just auctioned it off because they needed money just to pay these private contractors to keep basic functionality in the city running.
No, Jackson is an African city.
Right. And so this is what ultimately happens. I mean, Detroit is 86% black or something like that. And so all of the effort and work that white people had put into building that city.
And my God, there's some beautiful buildings in Detroit.
Right. No, it's literally some really nice places.
Places like Cleveland and Detroit have some of the most beautiful architecture in America. And what was just vines growing over them, and
the middle of Detroit is also empty. That's the other thing. Like, this goes to the suburbanization. Like, it's the outskirts of Detroit where the blacks are now, and then in the suburbs surrounding the middle, the center of Detroit is fucking empty.
Right.
Like, I have walked through it in recent years. It is a ghost town.
Oh my God.
It's almost like it's like you feel like it's dangerous because you're like, dude, there's no one here. What the fuck?
Right.
Like, so in the middle of a city, and there's
it's
nobody
such a ghost
there.
Town. There's not even, like, crazy homeless people around.
Yeah,
there's
no dude, it's insane. You got to go out to, like, the actual neighborhoods on the outskirts and then the suburbs surrounding it. That's where you get all the blacks and the crime and everything. You go into the direct middle of the city where all the big buildings are, it's just empty. It is empty. And it is the weirdest, most surreal thing. I don't know if you've ever been there, but I've been there a few times in recent years, and it is totally surreal. Completely.
It says here, so this is back to the article about black suburbanization. This is interesting. So there's actually a Harvard paper that was recently released on this. And basically what it says is that when you segregate, when blacks that get public sector jobs leave for the suburbs, the urban blacks become even crazier and more violent and poorer.
Yeah.
And so the argument is, let's take these crazy, dangerous blacks and just drop them from the air in like
Iowa.
Is
this What's Causing Black Flight? Is that this one? Is that the one? Is that the article?
No, black families leaving cities for suburbs. Maybe it's that one.
Well, I've got ideas.
Yes.
This is from 11 hours ago. What's Causing Black Flight?
You are correct. You are correct.
Okay, this one.
You are correct, Chairman, as usual.
Yeah, okay.
As usual. It says here. So this is what's the interesting part. Before the 1970s, when most high and middle-income black households had no choice but to live in cities, they had no choice but to live alongside low-income households. The implications here are a bit unnerving. Racial segregation gave lower-income status blacks, black households, access to interactions with higher status ones. The unwinding of the legal regime of segregation may have allowed middle-class black families to separate their fortunes from their lower-income compatriots. The sociologist William Julius Wilson pulled on this tension in his seminal 1987 book, The Truly Disadvantaged, writing, quote, "I believe that the exodus of middle and working class families from many ghetto neighborhoods removes an important social buffer that could deflect the full impact of the kind of prolonged and increasing joblessness that plagued inner city neighborhoods in the 70s and 80s. Wilson went on to argue that economic integration allows children born in poor households to see a greater range of possibilities for their life. Even during economic downturns, middle and working class families sustained important social institutions like churches, stores, recreational facilities, and schools. Entirely poverty-ridden neighborhoods would struggle to do the same. Now, Bartrick and Mass note," that's the Harvard paper, "note that income segregation among black households has quickly risen, and on typical segregation measures is roughly 50% higher than compared to the nation as a whole. That shift is attributable to the fact that lower-income black households have been largely unable to follow higher-income ones to the suburbs. Bartek and Mass note that in 1970, for an upper-middle-class black household looking to buy a home, 80% of the units in the price range were in the suburbs. But for a lower-middle-income renter household, only 20% were."
This is interesting, this little paragraph here. It says, "I want to note here the existence of a debate around the data underlying claims of increasing economic segregation. Logan cautioned me to treat those numbers as tentative, pointing me to his research unveiling bias due to small sample sizes in an email. Mass pointed me to corroborating findings that don't rely on the potentially biased index." So even here, their data is like tainted, or would they think it's tainted? This is one of the problems with these kind of academics, is they're going to assume certain data sets are like tainted by racism and stuff, even when they're not, you know, and they can always dismiss data sets.
I'm looking at here, though, is that when black people have the opportunity to flee black people, they do.
Yes.
That's the thing. That's the problem. So, I mean, the problem is kind of, it's kind of the snake eating its own tail.
So
if black people escape black people, then they go and move black people elsewhere, and then white people have to escape them, and then the same problems come
following. It's basically a never-ending cycle, and these people don't offer any solutions, and they always end up, years later, after they talk about this stuff, there's always a novel solution, and then when it doesn't work, they come and they're like, why didn't that work? I mean, I've been reading this my whole fucking life.
Yes.
These fucking people doing this, deliberating over this and debating this. And at some point, it's like, isn't it fucking obvious? Nature just is what it is. Just accept it. So it says here, research papers by economists at Harvard's Opportunity Insights Lab reveal the importance of economic integration on social and financial mobility. Biggest takeaway from their research is that connections across class lines really matter. The economists estimate that if a child born to a disadvantaged family were to grow up in an area with the economic connectedness that children born to advantaged families experience, their income would be 20% higher on average in adulthood than it would be if they grew up in an entirely poverty-ridden neighborhood. Black families that suburbanize benefited from moving to more economically integrated communities, but the people left behind, disproportionately poor and elderly, were left watching their neighborhoods deteriorate even further, losing population, losing hope. So that makes sense on some level, but also I think that much of that data about economic connectedness and such probably is not purely relating to blacks. It's probably relating to whites.
Yes, I agree.
And so I would assume that something like that probably would be true of whites. that if you grow up in a class integrated white neighborhood, you probably the working class people will do better off later on. I would totally believe that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think also another question here is that when the middle class people leave the neighborhood, the tax revenue to fund the police goes down, which creates more crime.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I mean, there are actually like a half a million reasons why this is true, but the main factor is black people. Like, they're just going to...
Yeah, no, they just create problems. And again, the lower half of them drags everybody down. I mean, I guess it sucks. It's not fair, but it's not anything we can do or anything we did to create this problem. You know, it's funny. We were listening to that poem, Whitey on the Moon, for a joke this weekend. And there's a line, even in that poem, where he's talking all this shit on white people, where he says, like, the junkies got me stressed. And I'm like, right, that's what you're really feeling in your ghetto black neighborhood that you're complaining about. Where he's got all these complaints about living in a black ghetto, and one of them is the junkies are stressing him out. And it's like, right, that's what's really going on. So Gil Scott-Heron, the guy that wrote the poem, what did he do? He moved to the suburbs and read poems for fucking bougie white people and got...
Yeah, there you go.
Got slow claps, you know?
So I don't know if you saw what Biden gave his, like, dramatic, like, Big Brother 1984, like, declaration of war or whatever.
We're calling it Dark Brandon. We're just...
Dark Brandon. He actually briefly kind of in passing mentioned something called the Safer America Plan. Mm-hmm. And basically, so I think actually this is from the other day. I'm sorry, not from that speech, but from his speech in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And this is what's in it. You tell me your thoughts. It says the plan funds the police and promotes effective prosecution of crimes affecting families today.
Hold on a second. Before we do this, I want to read the end of this article.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because this author basically throws his hands up.
Yes.
He says, being able to get out is its own kind of marker of privilege. When disaster strikes, people who avoid the worst of it are often the ones with more money. Physical ability, education, connections, youth, and of course, luck. It's telling that as the number of black young and middle-aged adults has declined in central cities, the number of those older than 65 has increased significantly. There are two ways to humanely respond to this inescapable fact about the world. You can try to prevent as many disasters as possible, or you can lower the bar to escaping them. If leaving a failing neighborhood or country was cheap or easy, many more people would do so. According to Gallup, 750 million people would migrate to another country. So watch out, Europe. Even within the U.S., declining rates of mobility point to large numbers of people trapped in communities they would likely leave behind if they could. Everybody wants to run from niggers, even across the world.
Yes.
Even the niggers in Africa want to run from niggers. The niggers in communities in America want to run from them. They all want to run away from them. At the same time, that like... blacks are being touted to white people across, you know, both in America and Europe as like the coolest thing ever that you should absolutely want to be around. Right. And that you should absolutely let into your countries. And if you don't, you're a terrible, evil person and you're not cool. Not only that, but you have a small penis and you're not cool. But then he says, I don't pretend to know the answer of how to revitalize the places left behind. Reformers could focus on low-hanging fruit to improve quality of life, like eliminating lead. Come on now. Improving air quality. These are some of the worst copes. Or providing the bare minimum quality of housing. Again, they've tried this before. But the graveyard of failed American urban policy making tells a pessimistic story about the government's ability and willingness. No, just their ability. They're totally willing. People want niggers to be different, and they try every which way from Sunday to make it so, and it doesn't happen. That's the real story. That's the real story. They gave them perfectly good housing. It was destroyed. They gave them, they got rid of lead and air quality. That's all stupid. The niggers are dumb because of lead.
Oh,
they're stupid because they live near the power plant. You remember all these copes?
White immigrants that lived in these cities were breathing in all the bad air and lead.
Dude, they were breathing in like air with like shit because they didn't have like adequate sewage and stuff. Like they were breathing in. There was a big problem of horse shit in cities in at one point because people were breathing it in because there were so many horses and buggies and they were shitting on the street and like people had to breathe in the dust from that. This is a problem. It's a problem in Afghanistan still, but it was a problem in America, you know, 150 years ago. So like, and that was when it was just like white people were in all these cities, right? It was all whites because blacks were still in the fucking plantations down south. So yeah, it didn't make us retards. I mean, maybe some, but you know, generally speaking, no.
Right.
The government's ability and willingness to change the fate of these communities, right? Because the problem is just black people, and you just can't do it. And the thing is, when that is the thing is, it's not that it's insoluble, but you have to recognize what it is. You have to look at the actual reality that is actually, I'd say, this is where I this is why we don't take like a moral backseat to these people where they're like, well, at least they want to try and help. Look, it's not even about that. You can say you want to try and help all you want. If you're telling somebody, if you throw someone out of an airplane and they hit the ground and die and be like, well, I want to help them learn how to fly. That's not a moral thing, right? Like that's not, you haven't done something moral. Even if you think it's like the best thing in the world, all angels should grow wings and fly or something. No, like fuck you. Like it's predictable. We have a situation where it's predictable. We know what's going to happen. We can predict it with dead 100% accuracy every time.
Yes.
And we're not the only ones. So then when you keep doing this, it's actually wrong. It's actually morally wrong.
There was that Chinese sociologist that visited America and wrote that book, right? And he actually made a point of saying that blacks were drag on American society.
Right, yeah, that guy. What was that guy's name? I forget his name. Yes. I still want to read that guy's book. I forget.
Yeah, yeah. And he made a point of that. And it wasn't because he was brought up on a diet of anti-black racism. It was because he simply came to America, observed
the realities.
Like someone from outer space coming in, looking in, and observing things from above and seeing that, you know, he just identified that as one of the main problems.
Right.
So you couldn't understand, like, what are they going to do with all these people?
Like, right.
They're dragging. They said they will be the end of America.
Right. No, it's true.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you want to discuss this thing, this nigger thing.
I actually think that the black problem can be solved. And I'm not talking about killing all of them. I'm saying just a government that takes into account actual qualities of blacks.
Well, right. Central plant, the problem isn't that you need to privatize black schools and put them in the hands of Kanye West. That's the Republican solution to this.
Right.
Is make Kanye West the fucking head of the black education system.
Well, he made a lot of money, so he must know how to do that.
Right. So that's their plan. Now, my plan is, well, because the Republican argument is that, well, the reason black schools fail, the reason why Jackson, Mississippi has no water,
it's like
the reason why
or some crap like
no,
that.
It's because the government is running it and all centrally planned.
Well, that's fucking retarded because the government runs water.
Right. In Montana, they run it in Montana. The water is fantastic.
You don't even have to answer it. It's so stupid. Like, the government runs it more. This was always my funny thing with like Stephen Molyneux and these people that would do these narratives. Like, so wait, the government is like more involved in the water in like Jackson than it is where I live?
Right. And the thing is, if you leave it just purely to market and say, you know damn right that if they privatize the water in Jackson, Mississippi, the federal government will be paying them to do it.
No, they're going to need to have that. Yes, they're going to have that, yeah.
A private company staffed by white men will be taking care of getting water to people, but the government will be funding it because there's no actual way to make that profitable.
And one of the things that happened in Flint was they did this, but then they actually, what happened was before this happened, blacktivists saw what was going to happen, which is that the government was going to essentially pay the state government, the Michigan state government in this case, was going to pay contractors from outside of Flint to come in and fix it. And they were going to be white contractors.
Right.
And so they raised a stink and they demanded that it be black contractors. And that only prolonged the problem. And in fact, what happened was there was a mix. And we even had guys that were working in Flint for some of these contractors. At least we had one listener who wrote us an email about what he witnessed and what he saw the black contractors doing. And I don't remember all the specifics of it, but he said there's certain things that you do where you, if you go into an area, if you're working on the water system, there are certain things you have to do. You have to like sound it out. You have to, first of all, try and find plans so you can know where the pipes are. And there's other ways of detecting the pipes before you do any invasive work so you don't burst any of them or harm them. These niggas are just starting to dig. And they were just hitting pipes and breaking them and doing just like doing all kinds of shit, and they had no idea where the previous pipes were. And like, this is a very delicate, you know, as anything, you have to have skilled and knowledgeable engineers that do this stuff, and these white companies have them, and these guys were going like these niggers were just willy-nilly putting, and they weren't just using like shovels, they were using like machines, and they were just like breaking shit. It's just like, oh my god. It doesn't surprise me at all.
And so that's the end of that. I mean, if you want to talk about this woman in Memphrica, let's talk about that.
Sure, yeah, this is a top story now, which you would think it would kind of surprising that a white woman killed by a Negro would be a top story. But this woman was a billionaire heiress.
Yes.
Now, don't get me wrong. This is a terrible thing. It's wrong for her to have been kidnapped and murdered like this. But, you know, it's getting a lot of attention because of her wealth. And, you know, Christina Spacuzza did not get any attention. No. In fact, they deliberately shut that down, and they put gag orders over the whole fucking trial.
No working or middle class ones.
Right. But this woman is a billionaire heiress, and, you know, I've gotten some insight.
Fox News, the national conservative outlet, was airing the press conference on her.
Yeah. Why? Like
I get it. It's wrong what happened. It's sad, for sure. She might have been a nice person. Who knows? But
yeah, she was. Like,
What I want to stress here, it's not like this isn't like just bitter class resentment or whatever. But I do want to show how, like, the reason why wealthy whites are libtards in to some degree is because the system for the system to work for them, in contrast to other whites, the system does not work for other whites.
No.
For extremely wealthy ones, it does. And I want to read, just like anyone who's ever, you know, had a relative go missing or a loved one, you know, some issue like this.
How fast they solve this problem.
The Memphis Police Department, which I guarantee you is not exactly the most efficient in the world. They didn't wait 24 hours. I mean, that's usually
we've got some insights into this from people.
Sure. I might write about this later when my publication is up. Yeah. So that's the interesting. It says here, let me just read this from the New York Times on how quickly.
Yeah. I was astounded.
I was astounded
at how fast they wrapped this case up.
Yeah.
Now, she's dead. Here. Don't get me wrong. She's dead. He just killed her. They at first were trying to make it like it was a ransom thing because she was rich. No, he just killed her. He just saw a white lady, pulled her into his car, and murdered her. He didn't know who she was. He didn't know how rich she was. He didn't care. White lady, victim, grabbed her, killed her.
He had done 20 years.
He had done it before.
Body of a kindergarten teacher in Memphis who was abducted last week during an early morning jog has been found, the city's police department said on Tuesday. The teacher and mother of two, Eliza Fletcher, 34, who also went by Liza, was last seen jogging near the University of Memphis campus at about 4:30 a.m. on Friday when the police say she was forced into a dark-colored SUV. So, again, I would not let any woman in my life go out jogging at 4:30 a.m. anywhere, but much less in Memphis. I mean, just look up Memphis. They call it Memphrica for a reason. It's one of the most violent places.
Yeah, and apparently I asked some people from down there. I'm like, do rich neighborhoods abut right up against poor bad black neighborhoods? And they're like, yeah, they do.
Yeah, and we heard from a person we know that has inside knowledge of this, that the police were shocked.
Yes.
Because there's an understanding that
this is what I heard. That they felt like some kind of social... this pissed me off even more when I heard it. That some kind of social compact had been broken by blacks. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Go ahead and explain what you heard.
Okay, so what I heard was that the police... First of all, they were on this case like that. They had video of it.
They found this guy's shoes. They did DNA testing on a pair of shoes that they found.
They picked this guy up. They found the blood in his car. They were trying to get him to tell them where the body was. He wasn't telling them. Eventually, I think they found it. But they had picked this guy up. They had gotten everything. But they had maybe they broke some of his constitutional rights. Who knows? But they even grabbed his brother, who denied any knowledge of it, and then totally sold him out.
Yep.
Said, "Yeah, he came to my house."
They picked up his brother on unrelated charges.
Yes, but his brother, interestingly enough, didn't do the no snitching. He sold them out, so who knows what kind of
tactics. Well, that's because they were going to hit him with serious gun and drug charges.
Right, and he says, like, oh, yeah, he was at my house, and he was, like, washing his clothes in the sink, and everybody thought it was really weird, and he was behaving weirdly or whatever, and he was cleaning out his car. So they went to work. So it shows you police are capable.
They can do it.
They have enough resources. They have enough knowledge of how to do these investigations to get these people and get them fast. And then what I heard was from people that have inside knowledge of this that are in Memphis and have been kind of giving us information on this, that amongst the police and the EMS, they are kind of in shock because they expect blacks to victimize blacks. They expect blacks to victimize poor whites. And this is all sort of, it's like the Joker thing from fucking Batman, right? It's this part of the plan. But this rich white woman, it wasn't part of the plan. And additionally, this is, I've also heard about some things about this woman and her family. Now, the school that she worked at was like a wealthy Catholic school, I believe, or something like that. Or maybe, no, Presbyterian. So it was like a religious school. So most of the students there were other wealthy whites. They were not actually, she wasn't like volunteering at a black school. And she didn't have to work there. She did it because she wanted to. Right. Because she wanted to do something. She's probably bored or whatever. But these are the kinds of people, according to what I've got, that are sort of like, they're not, it's not a libtard, but they're like kind of conservative leaning, and they are have this whole like class attitude with blacks, and this Southern money thing comes in. I don't totally understand all of it, but there's this idea that like what the person told me was this woman comes out of one of these trust in God families where like, things have gone for their way for the most part, but they, when they come around blacks, they want to like minister to them because that's what like the upper class rich people are expected to do.
Yeah, it's like the white people in Zulu.
And then
they
like trust in God, right? Like trusting God, nothing's bad going to happen to me.
Remember the wacky white people in the movie Zulu, the crazy German Protestants there that were refusing to leave.
I didn't see the movie. But,
oh, yeah. You're missing out. You got to see it. Yeah,
these I've seen the clips of the English like shooting all the blacks.
Absolute nut job. Like the Zulus are approaching and they refuse to leave. They have like this church full of blacks that they're ministering to, and they refuse. They have like this Protestant fanaticism about converting blacks and stuff. And
yeah,
the British soldiers are telling them to get the fuck out of there. And they're just like so
yeah, they're so high on their own supply. Like the thing that pisses me off about this attitude is that these types never show this kind of charity and sympathy and altruism to their own kind. Yeah. They will shit on the poor of their own race.
Right.
And I'm not saying that about this woman. I don't know that. Okay, but
someone was making a good point. It may have been to McNabb or something about victim blaming.
Yes, he was making a very good point about.
Yeah, that's a good point. In America, possibly because of our Calvinist or Protestant elect doctrine or whatever in the founding, that's part of it. But it's also merely conservatism, cowardice.
Yeah, it's a combination. Well, he says it's a cope for not having. He actually made a very good point about it. I want to see if I can find that. And again, we're not like victim blaming this woman, but we're kind of trying to explain the social attitude she had. Because I remember when I heard about this and I knew that some friends had some inside info, I specifically said, look, I don't do the toll paid shit. I don't do any of that.
No, I hate
but
that
what
stuff.
I want to know is, seriously, why was a rich woman jogging in this nigger neighborhood? That's weird. I'm sorry. I just need to know why
she
that was going on.
She may have just been kind of...
That's what I was told. She just was kind of clueless.
In a bubble.
She's in a bubble and kind of clueless and such. But what McNabb's point about victim blaming was is that it's a cope for being powerless to change your own circumstances. He says, the reason Americans can't be bothered to protest the big pharmaceutical companies raking in billions of dollars from poisoning people with opiates is the same reason they shrug their shoulders when blacks kill a 17-year-old white kid or FBI arrests a hapless patsy on trumped-up charges. Americans blame the victim and implicitly believe in a just world fallacy where bad things only happen to people who somehow deserve it themselves because of their own personal failings. You and I and every one of us are guilty of it, too. We've all said these. We've all had these thoughts. Should have stayed out of black areas. Should have known better than to follow those grifters into the Capitol.
Right.
Should have realized drugs are addictive. we should be asking why America is a dangerous minefield
right.
full of dangerous, violent minorities,
eventually
evil corporations, and abusive government in the first place. Eventually, you're going to have the basement-dwelling Spurgs are going to say, shouldn't have opened your front door.
You shouldn't have left your house.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? It's literally it.
So this is a great series of posts. He says, I think the victim blaming could just be a form of terror management. No one wants to believe they live in a world where they could be capriciously killed or jailed at any moment through no fault of their own. You have to believe it's possible to avoid disaster by making the right choices as a coping mechanism.
Right. And that's something that's also an outgrowth of obfuscating the enemy and the power structure.
Yeah. And also American individualism and all that
stuff. Once you understand how America works, then all that stuff goes out the window.
Right. So my regret for this woman is that she didn't understand how America worked. Right. Nobody told her.
Right.
She should have been told. We would have told her. We're trying to tell people, you know, and yes, no, you should stay out of the black areas. You absolutely should. But you also need to forthrightly explain to you why that is and why there's nothing morally wrong with doing it. Right? Like,
do you think this is going to cause the elites of America to finally stop doing the Black Lives Matter virtue signaling or no?
The media attention it's getting is, I don't think so. No. Overall, no. But I think that
it's definitely getting tons of attention.
It's getting a lot of attention. It's a top media story across all headlines. I'm seeing now that they found her body today. She, of course, was murdered right away. She was not kidnapped for ransom or anything like that. He just did it for jollies. He saw a white woman. He could do it. He grabbed her and he could do it. And yes, what I'd say, if what we heard from our friends who, you know, they could have a viewpoint on it, they've even cautioned me to say we might just not be totally having a completely accurate view on this.
Yeah.
It might be a one-sided thing based on who they know.
Right.
But what we've heard is that, like, the police and EMS are, like, all in a tizzy talking about this, and they're sort of shocked, and they feel like some kind of weird social compact was broken. If that's true, then, like, fuck those cops and EMS. Are you kidding me? What would ever make you think these animals are going to respect some kind of fucking contract with that? And why would you make such a contract
respect it? I reject that fucking very premise.
No, so do
that
I.
You need to be a billionaire to not be raped and murdered.
No, exactly.
In the street?
First of all, why would you? First of all, you're stupid if you think that they will adhere to it. But why would you even make such a compact in the first place? Even if they would agree to it. Why would you make such a compact with them? No. You should be sending out gangs of cops if a black person plucks the hair on a white person's head. Fuck you.
Right.
Like, you know, this is bullshit. And this woman was actually probably the victim somewhat of her own preconceptions, but also of her own class's fucking stupid preconceptions. Yeah. And the refusal to listen to us. We don't want this stuff to happen to people.
No.
This is terrible. There's going to be two little kids that are going to be just absolutely devastated and messed up for life now because of this. It's awful. And all those kids that were her students are going to have to deal
with this.
Maybe
it's time to give all that money to us.
Yeah, no, I mean, the NDP know what to do and how to handle this.
Right. All we need is the money.
We need the support of people and the resources to do it.
Oh, Jesus. It says the smell of heiress Eliza Fletcher's rotting corpse led police to her discovery. Jesus. Oh, Christ.
No, it's terrible.
I mean, yeah.
This also happened.
It's on CNN, by the way. CNN, which actually...
And they're showing the black guy's face. This guy, what's his name? Cleotha Abston.
No, it's Mario Abston.
That's Cleotha, his brother. Cleotha Abston is a killer.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, his brother is Mario, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of shit that we've been living with for years now. Normal, ordinary white people have to live with this shit. Now, what's interesting is that the Judeo left, I'm not talking about this woman in particular, but we were talking the other night about anti-poverty.
But on some level, she's ultimately a victim of all of that.
Yes.
Because she lived in that milieu.
Well, we were talking the other day about Antifa. They're impotently saying, they don't have 400 people.
The New York Post really is low class. They're the ones that are putting out that smell of rotting corpse shit.
I never told you about the time that I was at a job fair when I was younger and they tried to recruit me to write for them. And I looked at – because I've known the New York Post my whole life. And I looked at the guy. I'm like, are you shitting me? Are you shitting me? You think I'd write for you? I'd lower myself. I'd lower myself to write for the New York Post.
There's a nigger right there. So this nigger literally just did this for fun. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah, right? He saw like, a white
anybody,
woman.
Anybody thinks differently. Here she was. Here she was, a pretty white lady. Look at her jogging.
And she's naked. Her. Like, basically.
Yeah, no,
naked.
look at what she's wearing.
Again, let's. I'm not victim blaming here. But, you know, this isn't the world for that. You know?
No, you can't do that in this world. Like, people need to be told that.
Yeah, first of all, you shouldn't do that. I'm not a prude, but, you know, I mean, the point is you got to tell your daughters. Or your wife. She's married. Where's her husband? Who would let their wife go out like that?
Well, she had the money in the family. It was her. She was the billionaire heiress, so her husband.
So what?
I know. Even if she has the money, you got to have the pants.
So what? I mean, you don't let your wife go out at 4 a.m. You definitely don't let her go out naked at 4 a.m. You know, yeah. I mean, that's just how it is.
I mean, look at what she's wearing. You think that and look at that fucking animalistic ape. You think he's going to not fucking drag her into his car? No.
Of course he is. He's probably just driving around high and he just saw that. And he's just, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know what to say. You know, it's wrong. It's sad, but the police were responsive. But I'm interested. The main reason I want to talk about this.
Well, I think everybody deserves the kind of police response that the Fletcher family got. And I think that everybody deserves, like, and even they deserve to be protected a priori from this kind of thing. And this is why we had Jim Crow. This is why there were lynchings in America, and this is why there was Jim Crow.
Right. That was the control for this.
Right. Blacks have changed. I mean, and maybe they've gotten a little bit worse, but they've always had these basic tendencies, and that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, again, I keep waiting for the moment that like the liberals, the Jews, and the liberals are going to be okay. We had our fun because we were talking just now the other day when the Antifa were writing these impotent posts about our rally.
Yeah, yeah,
we were talking about how like they are victims of their own success.
Yes,
like they guess what? Like affluent that type of affluent gay white people and even Jews that support Antifa have fled the cities because they don't want to live around niggers either.
Right.
So now they're spread out around the country and they have the same problem we do without half of the will to be involved in our politics.
Right. So there's the nigger that did it. There she is with her little kids. Very sad. Terrible.
Right.
But what this is what America breeds. I mean, this is what it does. This is what it creates for white people. And now it's even rich white people.
Yep.
And
that's
so
what's new about this crime wave.
Whether or not that is going to change things, I don't know, because Jews still remain kind of protected. But
the fact that wealthy whites and Jews are being victimized by this black crime wave makes me think that the system doesn't have as much of a tight grip on this as we thought.
Well, they can't. They actually can't control it as well. They would like to insulate these type of people from this, but at the same time, when they also raise up these people because white people, the rich white people, aren't in on the Jew thing.
No,
they have to have the luxury beliefs, and in some sense, they have to mean it. And they have to truly hold them and then live by them. And that's when you'll get like rich white ladies jogging into the middle of a black neighborhood. Right. It's different. But yeah, if they could control for this, they would. But even that is a rotten system. You know, it should be because Christina Spacuzza deserved just as much protection as this lady did, you know, and among many others.
I want to talk a little bit about Ron Johnson now before we go.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
On how his race. Remember, Ron Johnson, when we went to Waukesha, Ron Johnson joined the Democrat senator from Wisconsin to condemn us. Not to condemn what happened, not to call for hate crimes when we clearly have the records. We produced a record showing that this man was Daryl Brooks was motivated by racial animosity.
Right.
We have all the records, extensive social media history of him saying, I'm going to kill, I want to kill the white babies, the old people. And then he went on and did it. So we have all of the evidence needed to convict this man in a federal hate crimes charge. And the senator of Wisconsin adamantly refuses. to even hear us out on this. Mm-hmm. So he's in a tight race. And I don't know about you, Mike.
No, I want him to lose. He should lose.
He needs to lose.
He needs to lose. He needs to lose. So when he was asked about Waukesha in a town hall, a phone town hall, we have the audio. I don't have it in front of me. The audio is on the documentary, the NJP Will to Rise documentary that came out. The audio is on there. He says, I don't like hate crimes. So that was his only response. So there was that. And then when we go out and protest, he puts down the cooperation with the Democrat senator, also the other senator from Wisconsin, Democrat. So he teams up with her, Tammy something or other. He teams up with her to release a statement saying outsiders aren't welcome to use this for their own political ends. And I'm like, Ron Johnson, why are you using it for your political ends?
Right. We
like, why don't you rally the people
to
this
Dark
cause?
Dark Brandon was actually calling out Ron Johnson for wanting to cut Social Security.
Yeah.
Nobody wants Ron Johnson to break with the Democrats on Social Security. They want him to break with the Democrats on the stuff that the Democrats are anti-white.
White people in Wisconsin, believe me, are not clamoring for cuts to Social Security.
No.
And in fact, the Democrat that he's running against should make that, if I'm sure is already making
they're
it.
They're already making it their issue.
The one reason
they're toning down the anti-white stuff.
Yes, and I believe that the person running against him is black. I think it's a non-white running against him. I'm not sure. Let me look at the Wisconsin.
I have no idea who it is.
It's a new person, and which is another one of the reasons why. And Ron Johnson is outspending them 7-1 and is still in a tight race.
Yeah, that's incredible. The Republicans, because you know what it is?
Should be a walkaway seat for them.
So the Republican small donation base has dwindled down to basically zero. So people that were giving a lot of money individually to Trump, they're not giving it to the GOP for the midterms.
Yeah, it's definitely a black. Mandela Barnes is the name of the person running against him. As soon as I heard that name, I was like, that's a new good name.
So what the Republicans are relying on now for money is a Republican Senate committee, Republican Congressional Committee, which is funded by Jews like Paul Singer. And like billionaire Jews just give a lot of money to these committees specifically. And then they allocate money to bags of shit like Ron Johnson.
Yeah.
On the orders of these Jewish donors. So he's got a lot of money despite having no small donations. And the question is, can he actually cling to victory here? And interesting?
And I don't even care that his opponent is black. Fuck that.
I've been looking at a lot of referendums, right, in states. State ballots. And these are actually the more useful way of understanding what people feel and think than what party they vote for.
Right.
Because you'll find things in referendums like this where, for example, in places like in the reddest, ruby red states, you'll find that when it's put up on the ballot, Republican voters support expanding Medicaid benefits.
Yeah.
Something that Republicans made a whole big deal of fighting against legislatively. When put on the ballot, people vote against it.
Well,
and on the other hand, in very blue states, when they put affirmative action on the ballot, it loses.
Yeah.
So clearly, the Republicans and the Democrats, the mixture of issues that they take up, do not represent the voters.
Not even to mention Kansas. And the abortion.
Don't even get into that.
Which
one.
Was
that
just one, like
that's the black eye of a century. Like
I mean, that was what a fail that was for that.
Here is an actual
issue.
Social because guess what?
Deep red state.
Yes, every Republican the Republican Party's economic platform has always been super unpopular. So it's always been kind of assumed that the Republican Party's economic platform will always get voted down everywhere if people have the ability to choose.
Right.
The problem is, I never – like people would guess like a place like Kansas where rural voters outnumber urban ones that
– Yeah, they actually have only like two cities and one of them is half the city is in the other state. And there's so many – the whole state is so rural that you actually have more ruralites than urbanites. The urbanites cannot pull their weight
in that
state.
Very Christian, very rural.
Yeah.
And they still got blown out by the abortion referendum. And I feel that there's going to be another one in Michigan. You're going to get the same result.
It's because they never actually looked at what these people
what they want.
What they actually want or even thought
don't
about.
Even, and don't even try. Don't even try to present the Republican Party as morally unassailable. Oh, they stand above the mob for the moral good. Don't even try to do that.
Fuck it, no.
Yeah, don't even try absurd. To do
that's
that.
That's ridiculous.
It's just a shillish.
If that were true, if they were willing to take seemingly unpopular stances and take risks because of a moral stance, then Ron Johnson wouldn't have taken the stance he did on Waukesha. That exactly. was a cowardly stance. First of all, it would have been popular if he did it. He would be winning now. If he was out there leading a charge to put Daryl Brooks away for life or even get him executed on federal hate crimes, if he was out there making that his cause, he would win the election. He'd win the election. He would.
Right.
He's exactly. His only response was to tell us to shut up and go away, and then to tell the callers that were calling in to his call-in show, well, hate crime laws are a bad thing. Okay, so then did you oppose them for the McMichaels, Ron Johnson? I know that wasn't your state, but still, it's a federal thing.
You know what's convenient, too? What's convenient is that they're actually pretending that the problem is Trump. That the Republican Party's relationship to Trump is the reason why people hate Ron Johnson.
Yeah,
that's not true at all.
No,
in fact, the real problem, and this has actually been measured by people that are fair analysts, like dissident political analysts that study the hard numbers and opinion polls. The real problem is that the Trump supporters don't show up for the smaller races because they hate the candidates for the GOP.
Right.
They don't
right.
show up to vote. Unless Trump goes there and begs them to. And even then, it's not always enough. Know,
there was some news about how Trump candidates were generally losing, but they've won more than they've lost. It's not like a huge deficit, but they do win. And they've won more than they lost, so it's not an insignificant factor.
Yeah, that's true. No, Trump's candidates have an 85% success rate.
Okay, that's actually pretty good. I thought it was. I didn't think it was that good.
So anyone saying that it's Trump's fault is wrong. I mean, all of the people that Trump endorsed against out of the 10 that voted to impeach him or voted for this January 6th stuff, 8 have been defeated.
Yeah. One of the reasons they want to put him in jail is they don't want him to be able to do this to the Republican Party anymore.
Right.
And at this point, he is doing this for purely personal reasons, right? Like, he doesn't intend to help anyone. And he's doing it purely for, like, personal reasons. But, like, the fact that he can do this and, like, you read it all the time. I mean, it has to be a thing because you read it all the time in these libtard publications and even in some conservatives. And you see the libtards constantly and the Jews really chastising the Republican Party for letting Trump hold their party hostage. And this is Biden was doing this. This is what Biden was saying in the Dark Brandon speech, is that, like, the Republican Party is great. He loves the Republican Party, by the way. Joe Biden loves the Republican Party.
If you listen
to Dark Brandon, he says he loves it. He's a huge fan of the Republican Party. The issue is Trump. Yeah. And the issue is the people that actually vote for it.
Right. Ron Johnson isn't suffering the polls because he, like, apparently some Jew was claiming that Ron Johnson opposed the verification of the election of state or something. I mean, did anyone even know that?
Who cares? I
follow politics.
That's not what it is.
I didn't fucking know that.
I think he's much more likely that he is suffering. And it might not even be the Waukesha thing because that has been somewhat suppressed, although he could have made that an issue. It's this Social Security thing is absolutely hurting him. That is fucking retarded. I know people from Wisconsin have got family up there. I know what they're like. They are not about that economic austerity shit in those states.
Wisconsin is a Germanic, white.
These are not typically Republicans.
Left-leaning, like, on economics.
Yeah.
They just want right-wing stuff on race and social issues.
Right.
And you're not giving it to them. Ron Johnson is, like, because Ron Johnson there has to be some sort of libertarian streak there because that's where fucking Paul Ryan was from. Either that or they're trying to meme it into something, but.
I think it's that those are the people that the Jews were happy to put to the forefront there. And also, when those were the politics of America, when you didn't have a populist option, it was whatever. These people were trained. I mean, look at where we did this whole thing. Warren did this whole thing.
Yeah, Barnes Ron is black. Yeah,
he's Mandela Barnes. Come on. You hear that name?
I fucking missed that.
That's a nigga name. Mandela Barnes. Come on now. Right?
He can't be that old. I mean,
no,
he's not.
He's not. He's young. He's young.
He's in his 30s.
He's young.
So it says here, the latest Marquette poll released last Wednesday showed the Wisconsin Republican lagging 7 points behind his Democratic challenger. I mean, that is, that's insane.
That sounds like an outlier poll, but still.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm looking at, let me look at Real Clear Politics.
It says that Johnson was actually trailing in 2016, but this one is all a much bigger trailing.
Well, yeah, they're also talking about how, like, Ron Johnson, like, they're trying to, the Republicans are trying to meme him as, like, this political survivor because of that 2016 win.
Right. He also was doing,
he's riding COVID. The Trump wave in that year, too, though.
Yeah, he's also doing COVID stuff. Remember, he did big COVID
populism? Yeah, he was always trying to do that. It never fucking hits. Like, that shit, the thing the Republicans found to their detriment is that stuff doesn't hit in the polls. Like, you're going to get a minority of extremely motivated online people, but you're not. And even then, they don't even care anymore because it's over now.
Well, you know, it's fascinating.
Like,
you
the COVID people's, the funny thing is, their demands have been met. Businesses are back open and there's no vax mandates. Like your demands have been met.
There was a Republican, I read this article, I should actually read it now again, that was actually talking about this, the Republican strategy for defeating Trump if he runs for president. And it was all about making it about COVID. They want to tie the vaccine to Trump and use that to get DeSantis elected.
I don't think that's going to work, man.
Well, let me just read this to you. This is from a few weeks ago. I'm sorry. This is from 5 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
It says here. So this is their game plan. It's about how Trump says criticizing how Trump handled the pandemic. No Republican should challenge Trump in 2024 other than DeSantis, Nunberg told insiders. So Sam Nunberg used to be a Trump campaign guy. He's now working for the GOP.
Oh, well, look at this, dude, real quick. Yeah. This is the Real Clear Politics on Ron Johnson, Wisconsin Senate Johnson versus Barnes. And it does not look very good.
Yeah.
Fox News has Barnes up by 4, Marquette Barnes up by 7, Trafalgar Barnes up by 2. The spread is 4.3 for Barnes. So that's 3 polls that he's not doing good. And if you go back to the polling data going back even to June in this next chart, it still doesn't look good for Johnson. So yeah, he's not leading in the polls. No. He is losing.
Yep.
He is losing. And I know that, I remember, like, this started happening to me a few weeks ago because I bought a Trump hat in 2016. They've still got all my data, and then you better believe that shit is sold to every fucking campaign. God. And so I'm getting these text messages. Their marketing is even dumb. I showed you that one screenshot of that Ron Johnson text message. They're like begging. It's really strange. It's really strange. I'm like, this doesn't make me want to support you.
No one's giving them money.
When you send me a text saying you're a loser, like, please help, I'm like, okay, you're a loser. Why would I help a loser? Like, that's my instinct, right? You know what I mean? I'm a loser. Please help me.
They're trying to, like, emotionally manipulate you into giving Ron Johnson money. It's fucking hilarious.
Why do I care?
Yeah. Fuck that guy. But anyway, this is Sam Nunberg is going to be – he's in the tank for DeSantis. He's probably going to work for him. And this is his game plan for stopping Trump if he runs for president in 2024, it says.
That's not going to work.
No Republican should challenge Trump in 2024 other than DeSantis, Nunberg told Insider. The biggest way that DeSantis could distinguish himself, he said, is by pointing out how he pushed aside the advice of federal health authorities during the COVID-19 pandemic – to reopen schools and businesses far earlier than other states. Trump, Nunberg said, was too deferential to Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute for Allergies and Infectious Diseases, who is now Biden's chief medical advisor. He's
not anymore.
He retired a day later or something. DeSantis regularly criticizes Fauci and chose to ignore his advice. Quote, one handed his presidency to Fauci, and the other fought against all the intelligentsia, was a shining beacon for the country.
Which makes sense of why Ron DeSantis the other day was talking about throwing Fauci into the Potomac.
Right,
the fuck he was saying, because this is that plan coming to life. But the funny thing is, the Democrats apparently have also realized that the other side of the COVID thing, like their side, you know, like the COVID-tard side on their side,
is
also done because they let Fauci go. Like, they don't see any utility to have him next to Biden anymore. They
you better believe that Biden told Fauci to retire.
Well, yeah, they don't need him anymore. That shit's done on both sides. No one cares. And people are tired of the extremists on both sides
of
that. People are actually tired of both sides of that question. They want everyone to fuck off.
It's true. It says you're criticizing Trump's support for the COVID vaccine. Trump-backed Operation Warp Speed, a historic government undertaking that resulted in COVID-19 vaccines being delivered in record time. But when Trump goes to rallies and encourages people to get the shot, his supporters have booed him. Some Republican insiders, like Nunberg, said Trump's vaccine push could be a political liability. Data shows voters in heavily red states do not plan to get vaccinated.
How old is this article?
This is from 5 days ago.
What the fuck?
Some signs show people fervently opposed to vaccines might agree. Earlier this month, Alex Jones, who hosts the InfoWars conspiracy theorist radio show, bashed Trump for supporting the vaccine and praised DeSantis.
He was told to do that by DeSantis' campaign. They got him. I would bet so. I don't know, but it sounds to me like they incorporated him into their strategy, asked him to do that. Because why would he bring it up after all this time?
I could see the people on the right, many of them were Trump people. That were very vocal in making this their center point issue. I mean, Trump, I've always wondered myself, like, where's the cognitive dissonance here? Like, Trump actually personally oversaw the vaccine. So, like, is Trump
When we were saying that, like, a year and a half ago, they just didn't want to hear it.
But it looks like now people that want to basically, in the establishment Republican Party, that want to get rid of Trump are planning to use this as a strategy.
I don't think it would work.
Trump stopped talking about it, and he's selling out stadiums.
Yeah, and I also think that, like, it's just – I don't see it working as the urgency of that issue has died. It's not important anymore.
Here's another wrench that Nunberg and other Jews in the establishment GOP plan to use is – winnowing down the list of alternatives. One of the biggest ways for Republicans to replace Trump at the top of the ticket in 2020
only be one guy,
may be for the party to decide that it will unite behind one person early on. During the 2016 presidential campaign, Trump was able to capture a nomination through a plurality of votes in state primaries. One of the main undercurrents from insider interviews in recent weeks was operatives' acknowledgement that if numerous candidates enter the race in 2024, Trump would once again have the ability to splinter the vote in his favor. And here's another one, doing a troll that he already lost. Michael Duhaime, CEO of MAD Global Strategy, who was a strategist for Christie's 2016 presidential campaign. Let me ask you a question. Why is someone who managed Chris Christie's 2016 presidential campaign?
Why would anybody ever listen to that person?
Still relevant. Why would anyone ever listen to that guy? The guy that was like basically like ended up being Trump's water boy, like Trump's bitch, like that guy. You're going to trust that guy on how to beat Trump? Like what? Why? How do these people?
I don't even think one. I think maybe they could have beaten Trump if they had cut down the candidates to just one in 2016.
Maybe Ted Cruz.
Maybe one on one, Ted Cruz.
They could have weaponized like the Christian vote and controlled Trump on his personal life or something.
I don't think DeSantis could beat him in a one on one.
But here's the thing: if they would have gotten Cruz and he would have lost the national election, you think Ted Cruz is ever going to win?
No, Ted Cruz would not have won
Pennsylvania.
No, never.
It says here, we don't need a guy. This is Duhaime. We don't need a guy who already lost to Joe Biden to run against him again, Duhaime said. Well, what about the guy who lost to Trump? What about the guy who managed the campaign that was crushed by Trump? Why should we need a guy to listen to a guy like that again? It says, he proved he can't beat Trump. And if he wants to soothe his soul by lying to everyone and saying he really won, he can. But the reality is he lost. Joe Biden is president now. Republicans have a chance to take the White House. They can't risk someone already lost to Biden.
Biden probably won't be running, but in any case, whatever.
That's the game plan. I think Biden actually capitalized on the fact that no one really knew he presents as a very moderate Democrat.
Right, no one knew how radical he was.
But his administration has been way crazier. And now that people know about this, he's not going to win their vote again in places like
Pennsylvania. Well, they're probably not going to run him. I mean, there was that some Democrat congressperson already basically said this and had to then like take it all back and apologize to the New York Times or whatever. And they basically said to the New York Times reporter that they knew this was true. The New York Times pressed them on this, and they're like, so you've been talking like inside the party? And then they're like, yeah, no, he's not going to run. And so who knows? Who the fuck knows? Maybe he will, maybe he won't. He is old. That man is old. You know, he will be 80 or 81 years old.
Trump's going to be old as fuck, too.
Trump's also old, but he's not like, I don't know. Being just being that old doesn't mean you're retarded. I mean, there was back in the day, you know, people like live longer now. So with all the health care that they can get if they're
Yeah, and you know what? Looking at Biden giving that speech, I've said this before, the man is not senile.
Well, he seemed to be on point in his delivery of that speech. He's probably he had a
tank load of amphetamine.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. But he had that typical sort of Biden slurring of some words together, but he didn't have any really bad gaps.
No.
You know?
No, he was very clear. And all these people like Tucker that were making fun of him, he's like, yeah, you and what army? The United States Army. The two Marines behind
him. The actual army that he's the commander-in-chief of. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, dude.
Look at this clown threatening us until you get yanked off your fucking television show live by
FBI. But no, I mean, it's not even just him. It's like he's got a whole apparatus behind him. I mean, there's
he has
so
Zog.
What's so funny is that this has actually even been a thing in fiction where there's like a totalitarian government with like a puppet leader and no one takes it seriously, but the government itself is like a very dangerous thing. Like, there's been multiple sci-fi stories and novels and all kinds of dystopian stuff. It's not an narrative that people are unfamiliar with, you know?
Right.
So.
Right. And so it's going to be interesting to see if they can generate any momentum for DeSantis on this COVID stuff. Like, can they do it?
I'm doubtful of it because COVID
You know what might actually be hilariously interesting is if, like, the kind of kosher conspiracy theory community goes for DeSantis, right? And Trump has no choice but to drop the retarded shit that he's been doing for the last few years and just lean into just sober white populism again.
That would be interesting. I mean, I wouldn't. I mean, that's a possible outcome. Yeah. Or
all the internet people, like, this is the thing. You see it with Compact Magazine, and you see it with the post liberals and stuff. Like, all those people are like, "Oh, the internet was right again. The internet was right again." Actually, no. I'll tell you what happened. The reason the internet was so successful, internet people were so successful in 2016 and meme Trump into victory, is that the internet people
were racist.
Right. It's because the internet people intersected with what the general population wants, which is someone to defend the white race in our country. That is why it was successful. That's why it resonated with people. If internet people are pushing retarded and ridiculous garbage, if they're going to listen to incels and they're going to listen to people who believe in like magic, they don't even believe anymore. A lot of internet people, the more loud and vocal ones allowed on social media, they don't let you talk about Jew stuff or anything like that. Their conspiracy theories are always kind of stuff about health and like vaccination.
Yeah, no, they don't want to talk about any of that shit anymore.
If you put that in front of like the average white man on the street,
there was this thing I saw recently.
It's going to be more polarizing.
At least. The conspiracy theory community is now like outing and ousting anti-Semites from their midst. Like I saw some stupid drama on Telegram about some. I didn't really look into it, but there's people posting like some conspiratard channel was attacking another guy who was doing conspiracy stuff, but then also was doing Holocaust denial and Zog stuff. And they like they basically like excommunicated this guy from their community. And the thing is, one thing you notice about there's some conspiracy people that would venture into the Holocaust, but most of them don't, and most of them don't touch
Not
Nazis
anymore.
Because their central tenet, their central belief system, is a liberal one. Their core. The core of the conspiracy theory, there's a conspiracy theory cinematic universe. And yes. it has a pretty strong canon, actually. There's some people on the fringes with different stuff, but there's a basic canon to it. And that canon is a neoliberal ethic. It really is. It's a liberal ethic. It is anti-Nazi. It is anti big government. It is individualistic. And it is anti-racist.
Yeah, it was. It was actually pro-white and authoritarian for a while.
And then when
COVID hit, especially, it was already drifting away from that by 2018-19. Mm-hmm. But when COVID hit, they really did go all the way into the
libertarian
aspect.
Now it's just openly pro-Jewish.
Well, now it's just libertarianism again.
Right. And which is pro-Jewish.
But the COVID stuff, the pro-Jewish aspect
was out of control during COVID. These people were so pro-Jewish. They were like, everything was Nazis. They were Jews. Yeah. They were getting Holocaust survivors to come to their stuff and talk about how the Nazis did this kind of stuff to us. Now, you could lie to these people and tell them the Nazis did everything. They'll never check, so it doesn't matter. So you can say Nazis had vaccine mandates. Nazis kicked people's doors down to give them a shots and stuff. They would believe it. They believe it because they'll never look. So it's like, you know.
Well, I noticed that there's a spread, an absolute tendency now, a pattern of Jews like being basically jetpacked into the front seat of the conspiracy theory movement.
Anytime there's a new issue, there's another Jew that's out there as one of the top spokespeople.
Right, running the conspiracy theories now.
Absolutely.
And I think the Jewish, what Jews miscalculated, this is my political.
They thought
analysis.
More white people would be fooled by that.
Well, not just that. I think what they miscalculated is that the Trump movement was a product of the conspiracy theory movement not being sufficiently controlled by Jews. So they spent years trying to figure something out to take back control of it. They seem to have succeeded. And now what's happening is that you'll see like internet people that are into the conspiracy theory movement that have basically embraced some of the libertarian aspects and even made peace with Jewish
100%.
That those people now are mad confused because they're all on the abortion thing and it's up for referendum in Kansas and it gets voted 60-40 to the ground.
Well, they can always
so
just
they're
say,
like, what happened to my meme magic? What happened to
well,
the
they can always
magic?
Just say
Why
it's
isn't that
fake.
Working?
They can always just say that
well,
that was fake.
Keep
I mean, they
saying
have the freedom
Laura,
to do
the
that.
Laura Loomer candidacy is another one. Like that is she outspent her opponent and lost. So it shows you just like white people will leave the suburbs if black people start showing up, no matter what. That is the eternal rule. It will always happen unless you lock white people in at gunpoint with fucking barricades and soldiers at the fucking exit.
Right.
White people will leave as soon as blacks start moving to the suburbs. That's the same true. White populism will flee from any movement that embraces the Jew.
Right.
And it's not because white populists necessarily, the normie white populists say, the person that's depoliticized and gay politicized for Trump. That person is not always knowledgeable of what the intricacies of that are. But the reason they flee is that when you embrace the Jew in your conspiracy theory movement, suddenly you start getting garbage rhetoric like white men invented the COVID vaccine to kill black people.
Right.
Or,
right,
you get
right,
garbage
right, right,
like
right,
that,
exactly,
and that's
exactly.
actually the factor.
You
that
don't even that you stop centering the whites in your conspiracy theories.
Right.
You start making it about stuff like that, and everything.
And,
people
that,
get sick
people
when the left calls everything Nazis, and then the conspiracy theory people also call everything Nazis.
Yeah.
That gets fucking tiresome.
White
people
just
are actually
both.
Tired of that
they
rhetoric.
Reject both. And if you
They're
go and you start putting out
rhetoric.
Fauci as a Klansman, as a Nazi, as oh,
that's
and all that's
fucking
that coming.
Stupid. It's just they dumb.
Wanna,
it's actually
the,
too dumb to.
The globalists at Davos want white people to hate black people.
I mean, I
when
saw,
you do shit like that, people white the ordinary white populace is actually with us.
Well, I actually saw that kind of shit on social media fairly a lot. That kind of Fauci Nazi this and that kind of stuff. And I also saw some elements of COVID populism in real life. Actual people that I would observe and see. People didn't like masks. They didn't like mandates. They didn't like being told what to do. I saw that stuff manifest in actual people that I saw. I never saw people out there, except in extremely like contrived protests, calling these people Nazis and doing all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like, you didn't hear that kind of stuff.
But
what you heard was people that were fed up with people kicking them in the stomach that they felt had always been keeping them down. That's what you heard if you just talked to people or saw people's behavior just out in
most
the world.
Most people that were into COVID populism were doing so as a fuck you to the system.
And most people
not because
they've also most people that were into that, if you brought it to them now, they'd be like, well, that's over.
Yeah.
We got what we wanted.
Right. Right. What's, now we're mad
why,
about
why are you still like you're dwelling on like no one cares.
Now they're saying we're mad about racial stuff.
They're mad about the border again. They're mad about crime.
And Trump is completely ignoring. Notice how Trump's instincts are just like ours. Completely ignoring fads, right? You don't see really Trump talking much about abortion. You don't really see him talking about COVID populism. Trump is ignoring all that shit, and he's going right to these. Let's kill the drug dealers.
Yeah, I don't know if he's talking about the border yet.
He's going to bring that back.
It's going to come back because the border is really fucking bad.
Even with the Freedom Convoy, yes, some people support that, but in Canada. But like when you see it's like, oh, they say we're racist, but look at all the proud people here. And then you have like a queer Jew running
it. Dude, the fucking gay Jew that was running it and making it all about Sikh truck drivers and shit.
You're going to, my friend. It's not having my opinion on vaccines where I say if you're 80 years old and you have diabetes, maybe you should consider getting the vaccine. That's about it. If you're young, don't get it. If you're healthy, don't get it.
But the other thing was we were accused. We were being attacked as the ones breaking solidarity on this. Right. And I was like, well, all we're doing is telling you that a queer Jew is running it and centering Sikh truckers. I'm just telling you that, okay? You can say I'm breaking solidarity,
right.
But if that
move the ball,
but here's my thing:
forward.
if that makes you feel, because you could just tell me to fuck off and say I'm doing the Freedom Convoy anyway and I love it. But the fact is, if I inform you of that fact, and now you feel demoralized about the Freedom Convoy, don't blame me.
Right.
I just told you the truth about it. So if that makes you not want to be part of it, then there's something wrong with what the Freedom Convoy itself is doing. If you wanted to just not know these things and pretend like this was a white uprising, fine. You could always just tell me to fuck off and not listen to me. But if you listen to me and then you got mad at me for telling you, well, then there's actually a problem with what they were doing.
Well, you're also going to get mad at the white people that will maybe have a morbid curiosity about it for 5 minutes and forget it ever happened.
Yeah, and you're also going to go.
And then you're
going to
campaign on how you supported this stuff.
And what's going to happen is you're going to go. And this happened, and a lot of people I know, they did this. Now, there's a lot of people I know that went just for fun, just to check it out.
It looks like fun.
And they were telling me, though, that like the politics being promoted were really anti-white. Like and conspicuously so.
Why should white people be
and so it's like why then are you like it seemed like the Jews really got out in front of that one really fast. Even though you know, some people were deplatformed.
Listen,
no one's going to jail for that.
There are things about the COVID thing that in retrospect we all got wrong on some aspects of it. Other things we got very right and the conspiracy people got wrong. And now of course the new cope is that predicting how something's going to happen doesn't matter anyway. No, actually, it does. If you're saying that if you do this or that, you're going to die and there's going to be a die-off. Yeah, no, it fucking does matter when you're actually talking about people's health. That does matter when you get that wrong. Just like it would matter for them if they got it wrong.
Additionally,
the point is that we had very much a middle of the road. We saw good and bad on both sides. We agreed and disagreed on both sides with this and retrospect more information. There's also, by the way, the response to COVID, even inside of liberal plutocracies, was very different. Sweden had a totally different response to COVID than the United States, than Germany, than Italy. Italy had the most draconian response.
It seems like the Jews were actually letting these different countries try different things and see what worked
the best.
So it
shows you that this was not a centralized response.
Yeah.
That Sweden. You think Sweden is defying the globalists? The Swedish liberal democracy that the Social Democrat Party and the Moderate Party in Sweden are defying the globalists, making an effort to? Come on. They just had different responses because they didn't know how to deal with it. That's it. And so some people copied China. Other people wrote it. DeSantis wrote it. The Swedes wrote it. That is not really something to read into
Florida
politically.
Florida is also an easier state to ride it out with because of
right.
the heat.
Right. So the point I'm getting at here is that this stuff is not – it's going to die on the vine. If you're going to run DeSantis 2024 on this, DeSantis
I just don't think
itself,
it's going to hit, particularly if people have once again – like Trump has managed to rekindle some of the personal loyalty of his supporters by attacking the FBI and attacking like these plutocrats and libtards. Him then going and attacking Trump personally on something that they consider a dead issue, it's not going to work, dude.
No. And I see this too, that I think Ron DeSantis himself, who isn't dumb, He's actually really smart. He's just a terrible politician. He's trying to do some symbolic shit with something about ESG. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, environmental social governance.
Yeah. So
it's basically like woke shit in the corporate world is what ESG is. ESG is being pushed really by the big financial powers downhill onto the big corporations where they want them all. And
yes,
you know, frankly, like BlackRock and these other big investment firms are really behind this ESG shit and this push. It's basically just woke shit in the corporate workplace.
Right.
And people get sick of it. People hate
it. Ron DeSantis is trying to pass a law to prevent
against it.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Which is actually an attack on capitalism.
Yeah, that's
the direct attack. It's like something Juan Perón would do or something. So he knows where the energy.
That's going to get a lot more legs than COVID shit.
Oh my God, he knows.
Assuming people know what it is, one of the problems is that like it's kind of an esoteric term. It's kind of like instead of attacking the schools for attacking white kids for their race, literally they should say the schools are racist against whites rather than like CRT, because CRT. You know, because they want to make sure that they don't make it. They want to attack the things that white people hate without making it about whites. And part of ESG is like getting rid of white people in the workplace. It's like replacing them with minorities and stuff like that. Getting rid of white men particularly. And that's part of ESG. And then you get like a high ESG rating and then you get access to other investment funds or something like this. I don't know. But the Jews are basically from the top and you know, Larry Fink and BlackRock and just like what, like 15 trillion in assets or something like that. They're trying to push this top down on companies that they manage and own assets in as sort of like a way of like, have you purged enough white people from your workforce yet? They're literally doing this. And the cover for this is ESG. Now, he could make the attack on the substance of what's being done, or he can attack the word, because they can always just call it something else. They can just change what they're calling it, right? And then it's whatever. Why don't you make it illegal to purge whites from the workforce? Why don't you make it illegal to attack white kids in school? Like, that's what people would really like, and that would be truthful and would get you a lot of support.
Well, the challenge, though, is that you know, getting people into ESG funds, getting companies and so on, pensioners into ESG funds, actually would probably bring you greater returns on your money because Jews run these things and they're just plan. They'll just plan the economy to incentivize this.
Well, that's what Larry Fink and company are doing,
right? And so what Ron DeSantis is claiming he's going to do,
he's not going to defy them in reality.
Well, so, yeah. he's making a lot of noise about this. He's claiming that he's going to pass a law to ban it. To ban you from investing in ESG funds. So, like, of course, Jews
why doesn't he
arms.
Ban them from doing it?
What?
Like, why does he just ban them? Why, instead of banning people from investing, why doesn't he just ban them from doing
it? The thing is that, like, yeah, you could ban it in Florida. It is defense. I'm no fan of Ron DeSantis, but, you know.
Well, it seems like it's a smart, thing.
They're based in New York City. Like, what are you going to do? Okay, you legislate against them.
Well,
a lot
of Jew stuff is moving to Florida, too. The whole conservative apparatus is moving to Florida. And it was kind of a COVID thing. Maybe they'll move back to New York and such, you know, when this election cycle is over. But it seems like they're moving a lot of resources and assets down to Florida.
Right, but you see that Ron DeSantis is evolving. He sees Trump becoming more formidable. And you see he's evolving to more concrete stuff. Like before, Ron DeSantis is anti-woke stuff. Like you get people like Rod Dreher going, whoa, Ron DeSantis really showed them. He called Lord of the Rings woke. You know, he was doing that stuff. It's not hitting. It's not landing.
Well, nobody – we don't need Ron DeSantis for that.
No.
People are very well – the whole Lord of the Rings thing is dead in the water. They're not even letting people review it anymore.
Right.
Because it got banned so badly.
Right.
No one's going to watch that garbage.
Right.
No one needs Ron DeSantis on that.
Also, it's also a stupid issue that doesn't matter. Yes, it sucks.
I can understand why. It has to do with white representation and stuff like that and Jewish elimination of whites from
I get
why people are mad about it.
But it's
a thing that – that's something the internet can take care of.
Right.
And how?
I understand, like, but the thing is, like, you know, if I want to comment on this, J.R.R. Tolkien, he was an adamant anti-Nazi in World War II. So when the good guys were trying to save Middle Earth, where was Tolkien? He was on the side of the Jews. Who says that he would even oppose something like this, especially if they gave him money for the rights?
Yeah, you don't know that. You don't know that.
Who says?
You don't know what he would do.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to have, like, because it doesn't even make any sense. Someone brought this up, like, the different factions and races in the Lord of the Rings reboot, or the off, whatever it's called, the people inside of the communities and the factions and the races are themselves of different races. So it doesn't even make any sense. I guess.
Yeah, you have like black elves and black dwarves. So you have like people of the same race across these. Yeah, no, it's fucking retarded. Well, also the other thing though,
someone posted this very quick scene from it where like there was one guy who's like, "What are you looking at, pointy ears?"
And they're both niggers.
Like, no. No. It was like a white. It was like a white, and then like the elf was a nigger.
So he's like, going in pointy ears. That's the most salient characteristic.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you looking at? Big lips.
Yes,
what are you looking at?
That's what they'll notice.
What are you looking at? Fat lips.
What are you looking at? Pointy ears.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff.
So, that's really fucking dumb.
That stuff is self-canceling.
Yeah, it's like, just retarded, and the internet is already.
It's a billion dollar boondoggle
in Tolkien's defense, is they couldn't do this shit until after his son Christopher, who was the manager of his estate, died. They were not doing this stuff until he died, and now they're doing all this shit. So there was some block there. Anyway, whatever.
Sure.
But yeah, no, Tolkien was kind of like a libertarian anarchist, even in some of his like views. Now, he did write some stuff, pro-worker stuff, because there's at the end of Lord of the Rings, like Frodo goes back to the Shire, and some like Jew capitalist has like enslaved all the hobbits in industrial work and shit. Like and the character of like Wormtongue is obviously a fucking Jew, right? So there's things in there, but you know, yeah, he just sided with he picked the wrong horse. He thought like the fucking Germans was like Mordor. No, it's the absolute opposite.
The absolute opposite.
It was Gondor, not Mordor.
Yeah, anyway. Exactly. But the point I'm getting at, though, is that, you know, again, we've been talking about Ron DeSantis forever, but it's interesting to watch his rise. Is this purely
We were saying he was going to be big 2.5 years ago.
Yeah!
And people were like, no, that fucking guy.
What I saw him doing, and I saw Kristi Noem kind of trying out for the position as well.
Yes, and Greg Abbott too.
And Greg Abbott, but they've fallen
by the wayside.
They got owned by like because they're too stupid, you know. They're trying, frankly. Like
I think the Jews also kind of settled on DeSantis.
Right, and he's also like deep in their pocket.
Yeah, so they've got every. Yeah, I mean, every time he does something, like his bill to protect monuments and stuff, like a number one issue was like the Holocaust museums, right? Like, when he talked about protecting public monuments, everyone's like, okay, base, he's going to stop the libtards from tearing these things down. Well, a number one thing listed in that bill was Holocaust museums. It just poisons it. It just poisons everything. It's always there. And I've talked to people about this, and they're like, they're always like, well, you know, you got to do that. I mean, you don't have to do that. You don't. You have to stop having the attitude that he just has to do that. Because if you will let Republicans get away with that, they will do it forever. You have to say no at some point.
The way you know Ron DeSantis is out of touch with the Trump base is that he's actually – so he found like 20 or 30 examples of voter fraud in Florida. And he's actually like doing like this whole like program to prevent it again and putting people in jail and shit like that. But here's what these guys don't understand as they try to – so they try to seduce Trump's base away from him. I'm of the opinion that the majority of Trump supporters don't actually believe there was substantial voter fraud in the 2020 election. I think that this is actually more about the fact that they don't want Trump to lose in 2020 and that they don't actually give a shit if it's a fair election or not if their guy loses, which actually is more of a healthy way – it's more of a healthy attitude. I mean, I have no dog in that fight, so I'm not going to take that opinion. But I understand it. Like
It's actually better if they're like, "Fuck that, we don't want to lose. Fuck you.
Right, we don't want to lose. So we're just going to say that it was fake. We don't actually believe it.
But it was fake in a real way.
Yeah, I mean, you could make long-winded argument on why rationalizing why it was, but you know,
I'm just saying, you know, elections are all fucking fake. Like, because just the way right. everything's manipulated and put sure. into certain boxes and stuff, like the sure. actual desires of the people
but
are not represented.
The media yeah. Trump supporter is not as much animated by election fraud, the concept, the principle of it, as he is by the fact that Trump lost the election and he's not the president. And so that is something I think.
Oh, yeah. And the hate for Joe Biden, I mean, it's never going to, you know, they're never, they're going to make zero impact at all with these
right.
people.
Right. It's mostly the people, and I'm telling you, like, if Trump in 2024 says, I lost the election, but I want to take power anyway, every single one of those people would go along with him. Like, it's
right.
just that.
Like, the stolen election elections, was what was
this
like
the. Country has turned into Sri Lanka. That's
like
the real
the idea
story.
Of the stolen election was like a cope for the fact they were almost coping with their own feelings of yes. not giving a fuck about the election.
Right.
Right. And like, it's yes. If you said Trump was like, well, we lost, but we want to keep power. So let's like raid the Capitol. They would have still done it. They would be like, right. Well, let's hold on now. I care about
the only reason.
Right?
The only reason that was just a ridiculous act rather than an actual coup is that Trump wouldn't lead them. If Trump had gone
right,
there,
no. If he had actually
put those good old boys would have brought their guns.
And also, if he had actually had, if it was real, I mean, there would have been more people, and he would have had fucking things in place.
There would have been a fucking civil war.
He would have been actually what he was accused of doing, which was like positioning people to make it easier for that to happen, instead of essentially allowing the government to set these people up.
Right.
So right. yeah.
And so the voter crackdown stuff, voter fraud crackdown that Florida's doing.
Maybe
totally
they're doing that to make sure that Trump loses. They might even be doing that.
No, but this is all a fundamental misunderstanding on what Trumpism has always been about. It really is what the liberals say.
It's just racism.
Joe Biden is right. It's semi-fascism. It is. Yeah. It's all true. And if you're going to live in a delusional world where you take these people at face value when they say something in bad faith,
they simply
have learned from the Clinton people that were saying Russia stole the election. They're just – those people didn't believe
They didn't
it
believe
either.
That either. They just Lip-tarts hated the fact that Trump that. Won. They just right. hated that Trump won. They hated Trump and they hated his people and they hated that he won. They didn't believe for a second right. any of that shit. And you know what's funny? I've had some libtards admit this to me.
Right.
I've
right.
gotten journalists that talked about this shit to admit this to me. That fucking yes. journalist Peter Savodnik admitted it to me.
Right.
That he was the, oh, that was what we were doing in 2017. I was like, oh, so what, you're not doing it anymore? You don't believe it's true? Right. So,
and the same is going to be true in 2024. Ron DeSantis goes out there and he goes, I didn't obey that little elf Fauci.
No one's going to give a fuck about that.
I've cracked down on election fraud. I've stuck it, you know, all this stuff, all this shit. He's going to go and talk about all this stuff, and Trump supporters are going to be like, what the fuck is this guy even talking about? Who gives a shit? Trump is saying yeah. racist stuff again.
Right. Trump's talking about killing FBI agents and yeah. drug dealers. Like, let's go with that instead.
This guy's
like,
talking about hating federal agents. Like, yeah. Let's.
yeah. Again, look, and it annoys me because I know that Trump is a fraud. He's just a much smarter fraud.
He's a political genius.
He's a much smarter fraud than
he's a political genius. That DeSantis,
most of the GOP, yeah.
And no amount of money, if they give DeSantis historic amounts of money to beat Trump in the primary, Trump will make it up with small donations, including whether we like it or not. He kind of has us in a checkmate too, to some extent. I mean, we have no choice but to fight, and somehow with the issues he touches, go along with it. If he's attacking
well, we have
the FBI,
to, yeah, we he do, he puts us in a. It would be easier for us if he wasn't around. Frankly,
right.
It would be.
Right.
It would be easier for plus because there's going to be things that he's going to say that we're going to like.
Right.
And we're going to be like, fuck, god damn it.
Right. And he's going to take stuff directly from us, especially if we grow next year to thousands of people.
Yeah, the only thing what we have to count on is those of us that are seasoned and dedicated white nationalists that know what Trump is about and know that he's a fraud. And understand that joining our ranks and making us look bigger and bigger, because there's thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people that know everything that we know. I mean, just the listeners to this show, the amount of people that have been awoken to this over the last and that got fed up with him when he was president and have long memories and remember that. So those people are going to have to boost us, come over to us and boost our numbers and make us bigger so we are more credible. In relative to him, and you better believe he will be reacting to us. He's going to be reacting to us.
His people
not directly.
Are going to be listening to us.
He's not going to mention us. He's never going to say our name. But he will be have people
so
that are listening and copying
it's gonna
from
happen.
Us.
Like Ron DeSantis is like around my height. He's like not that tall. And the first thing Trump is going to do is make fun of his height. And then he's going to be like, look at this guy. Look at this guy. He thinks he's Napoleon. But I don't know. He's kind of short. He's shorter than Napoleon. He's going to do baby shit like that. And DeSantis will be caught off guard. And he's going to try to attack Trump back. He doesn't have it in him. And it's just going to be a fucking shoo-in for Trump at the primary.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah, I mean,
if he runs, it's going to be a shoo-in for Donald Trump. He's going to be the GOP nominee.
Yeah, the only I think they might put him in jail.
They're going to try, but if he's running for president and they put him for jail and he's winning, they're going to fucking there's going to be riots over that. And he's going to make sure to fucking.
Well, they already had a guy attack an FBI office over the Mar-a-Lago raid. You know,
right.
Some guy went and tried to kill FBI
and that's
agents.
With Trump going out there, going calm down, everybody, calm down. Let's lower the temperature.
Yeah, they're telling him you better do that shit.
And you know what? He's not going to do the religious stuff. I think that they've A-B tested the religious stuff now. I mean, the real test is going to be the midterms, but you already see them. I mean,
Trump is not going to run as a Christian nationalist.
Blake Masters has put a lot of the religious stuff that was at the top of his agenda way, way down.
It doesn't. The abortion thing, and I think the abortion referendum in Kansas hit these people hard. Like they were like, "Oh shit, this actually." It was always a stupid cope. It was always What's funny is these people hate us, and therefore they disregard us, but they can actually do a lot better for themselves if they wouldn't listen and copy us.
So Ron DeSantis was in Pittsburgh not long ago. So he's touring the country in Trump's shadow. And it says here that there's a downtown hotel ballroom he was speaking at. And this was his quote. Listen to this. This is why Ron DeSantis is going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
We must fight the woke in our schools. We must fight the woke in our business. We must fight the woke in government. We can never, ever surrender to woke ideology. Like trying to channel Winston Churchill a little bit. But ultimately, nothing he says has any substance.
Yeah.
It says here that Ron DeSantis kept talking about religion and like stuff like that.
Right.
I don't get the impression that places like Pittsburgh or Ohio.
Yeah, the hard Christian cell in Pennsylvania has always seemed a little weird to me. Like, you know, I mean, I always kind of feel when I see someone with a Mastriano sign, which is rare. It's actually very rare to see it. I was like, yeah, it's probably an okay person, but like, you know, it's like, you know, and I, you know, but it just, it's not. It's funny. Like this guy near me has a fucking Dr. Oz sign out of his house, and I'm like. I'd have more respect if you had a Mastriano sign, to be honest with you.
Dr. Oz.
Yeah, I was like, dude, if you had a Doug Mastriano sign, I would feel like a lot better inclined towards you than this dumbass Dr. Oz sign, but whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to go. I'm going to, since the stream is working really well now, it was iffy. In the first half hour or so, it was real choppy, but it has cleaned out, and we're getting a very solid stream. I got green lights all the way. So, and additionally, I've seen the numbers of people on the stream go up. We had like 70 people on the stream in the first half hour. Now we have like over 300 because of the fact that it's actually working very well for the last 2 hours. So I'm going to close out the show by playing that video again. Just because I really
I wonder what the country behind me is. What I don't even know. I don't know.
Like Acapulco or something? I have no fucking
idea. Oh, there we go.
Maybe some like Mediterranean country? I don't know. Like Greece, maybe? I don't know. So I'm gonna end the show with that video because I just really like the video. It's awesome. Our video guy Franz did a fantastic job on this. And I just really like it. This is kind of a bit of a 2 year retrospective on the NJ on my speeches with the NJP, and then some footage from the new event. It is fanning my balls a bit. I didn't actually request that, but that's what he did. But whatever, I still like it. It's a great video. And
flattery gets you everywhere.
I did not actually ask for this to be the.
I said, dude.
Anyway, but no, it's a great video though, and I'm going to play it, and also look for the stuff, more footage from the event coming out this week. It'll be more stuff being released this week. So yeah, I'm just going to do that again. Let me get it set up. and we'll go, and then we'll go. But all thanks, right, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you guys. We will see you guys next week on Strike and Mike, and all week on TRS as usual.
Yes, sir.
We are announcing the formation of a new political party, a new political vehicle that is going to fight for you, for white rights, for our people in America and the world. This is going to be very difficult. In fact, it's probably the most difficult thing any of us, or really anyone in this current society, could do. It's more than just physical courage, it's moral courage, because they are going to throw everything at us. What is our life for? If we don't struggle over adversity, life becomes soft, empty, meaningless. We are here to struggle because we want the challenge. We want to fight. Every day, we are told by another elite outlet that we will inevitably lose power, whites will inevitably be racially replaced, and that this is a good thing. It's great when they talk about it. It's a paranoid conspiracy theory when we talk about it. But never once in this democracy is any policy that's leading to this racial replacement been voted on. Has anybody here ever voted for it?
No!
Limited government is not the same as freedom. Your rights are being totally crushed by corporations, but Republicans won't do anything because our philosophy is not to interfere.
White people are told in this country that they're nothing, that they don't exist, that they don't have rights, they don't have civil rights. All the sympathy, all the soft stories, it's all reserved for poor black people who have every privilege in this system.
I saw a video of a woman speaking at a local school board meeting in Virginia. She said that her six-year-old son had come back from school last year saying that he wanted to kill himself because he is white and he is born evil. It's not because of critical race theory. It's anti-white hate.
Yeah.
Being taught in our schools to our children. And the Republican Party not only refuses to do anything about it, they refuse to even call it by name. And if you try and call it by name, they'll fight you harder than the sick liberals and Jews that promote it.
It is impossible for this system to acknowledge that purposeful racial violence can be done against white people. And if they won't acknowledge that, they just open the door for more of it.
Who is it that sees white racial advocacy as so threatening to their own power that they would libel an entire race with a bogus terrorism narrative? And the answer is easy.
White people are suffering racial murders like Ethan Limey, and the system is doing its best to pretend it doesn't happen. They do not want white people to see that they are actually being victimized.
We want to protect all the white children that are subject to violence from out-of-control black students, from sexual abuse from deviants and freaks, and from psychological abuse from cis and shills teaching them to hate themselves in the schools. And we actually want to do it!
Yeah!
These people don't have a moral leg to stand on in calling anyone else an extremist or a terrorist. We are fed up with being lied to and being lied about.
Go.
Yeah,
that is great.
That's a pretty crazy ending to that. To
I bet there's more people there than at Ron DeSantis's Mastriano rally in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, could be. Anyway, thanks everybody, and we'll see you next show.